You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
Senator John Kerry has expressed that if elected, he would roll back President George W. Bush's tax cut for the wealthy. The administration has criticized the move, saying it would be detrimental to small businesses. Vice President Dick Cheney commented on the issue during Tuesday's vice presidential debate.
A great many of our small businesses pay taxes under the personal income taxes rather than the corporate rate. And about 900,000 small businesses will be hit if you do, in fact, do what they want to do with the top bracket.
According to the Nonpartisan Tax Policy Center, Kerry plans to roll back tax cuts for those making more than $200,000, but at the same time would create new tax cuts specifically aimed at small businesses. The center calculates that less than 450,000 small businesses would be affected by the overall rollback, 400,000 less than the number quoted by Cheney. The LA Times recently gave an example of one individual who benefits from the Bush tax cut. Lynn Cheney, wife of the vice president, as the owner of a consulting firm where she is the sole employee, declared herself a small business last year and received a tax break of nearly $50,000.
Hotel managers say their lockout of striking San Francisco workers will last indefinitely. Over 1,400 workers at four downtown hotels are on strike. In response, the San Francisco Hotel Multi-Employer Group locked out 2,600 non-striking workers at 10 other hotels. Unite Here Local 2 President Mike Casey.
Playing hardball because they're global corporations and they're used to getting their way and they aren't used to having to sit down as equals across the bargaining table from people.
Casey said workers are trying to protect health and pension benefits, cut workloads, and get more pay.
Locating the owner of a glass slipper is not the most pressing matter in the Magic Kingdom these days. At the grand opening of a new World of Disney store in New York City, more than 60 members of the Services Trade Council Union that represents workers ranging from ticket takers to costume characters at Disney parks and hotels in Florida handed out leaflets complaining of drawn-out negotiations with park officials. Negotiations have been going on for more than 6 months. The employees are concerned because the proposed contract eliminates some overtime benefits, increases health care costs, and eliminates a pension plan for new hires. Disney World spokeswoman Jackie Polak complained of the protests in New York, saying time would have been better spent at the negotiation table than protesting in a different state. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. All of the attention given to Halliburton and their no-bid contract in Iraq would make you think that it is not a regular practice. But a new report from the Center of Public Integrity reveals that at least $362 billion was spent on no-bid contracts by the Pentagon since 1998. But the Pentagon did not stop there, rewarding $255 billion in cost-plus contracts that allow companies to spend as much as they deem necessary on a job, including an agreed-upon profit.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
So, Jasper, how was your year?
Excellent. This administration gives the best returns ever.
Do tell.
Well, the money I paid to a lobbying firm in Washington brought in over $50 million in overseas contracts.
Oh, yes, lobbying pays.
Are you still into commodities, Max?
No, I'm funding politicians. My campaign contributions got me over $100 million worth of regulation waivers.
Well done, Max.
Today's wisest investment. Investments are in politics. Where are you throwing your money?
Easily paid for by billionairesforbush.com.
Thank you, Nicole and Jeff Rank, for standing your ground and standing up for all of us. This young couple from Charleston, West Virginia, was arrested on the state capitol grounds during a July 4th appearance by George W. They had come to see the press in person, but also to make a quiet statement of their own. They wore hand-painted T-shirts with the international no symbol slashed across Bush's name. That was it. They didn't shout, heckle, or disrupt anything. They simply wore T-shirts. But as they stood there peacefully, two Secret Service agents accosted them, demanding that their T-shirts be removed or covered. No, they quietly said. So the agents instructed local police to arrest them. They were handcuffed, jailed, and charged with trespassing. Nicole, who worked for a federal agency, was subsequently dismissed from her job. But the Ranks, who had never before engaged in protest, fought the ridiculous trespassing charge, and now a local judge has thrown it out of court. Also, Charleston's embarrassed city council has publicly apologized for violating the Ranks' First Amendment rights, noting the city police only acted because they were directed to do so by the Secret Service. And the federal agency backed down and rehired Nicole. Now, Nicole and Jeff are trying to stop the Bushites from stomping on other people's right to protest, as has been happening at Bush events all across the country. With the ACLU, the Ranks have filed a federal lawsuit against both the White House and Secret Service, seeking a court order declaring such repressive political actions unconstitutional. Jeff, a registered Republican, says simply, unless common citizens like ourselves are willing to stand and fight for their civil liberties, those very liberties that our nation was founded upon, ideals of freedom that keep us strong today, will wither and erode until they are gone forever. This is Jim Hightower saying, thanks to the Ranks for standing so tall.
38%.
46%.
42%.
I cut my payments in half.
How much can you cut your monthly student loan payments by refinancing with College Loan Corporation? To find out, just call 1-800-2-COLLEGE. You'll quickly be connected to an expert loan consultant who will answer your questions and tell you how you can cut your monthly payment by up to 50% by refinancing your federal student loans at rates as low as 2.63%. 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
Your dog eats your new sofa. Pet satisfaction rating 3%. Your hairdresser doesn't know burnt auburn from burnt toast. Hair color satisfaction rating 5%. After years of marriage, your husband still leaves the seat up. Spouse satisfaction rating minus 2%. Your car insurance company saves you hundreds of dollars and handles your claim quickly and fairly. Car insurance satisfaction rating 97%. Oh, you must have Geico.
Geico's customer satisfaction stands at 97%. How would you rate your car insurance company? Geico. 1-800-947-AUTO.
Uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And greetings, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you. Welcome, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Broadcasting live today, coast to coast. From California to North Carolina on terrestrial radio stations, beaming down from outer space on the Sirius satellite radio system, and streaming around the planet on radiopower.org. Going to drop into our chat room. In fact, I understand we have a listener in Sweden who's dropping in. I have an email from Norway to share with you. We have listeners all over the planet for this show. It's really quite remarkable. Anyhow, you want to drop into our chat room, go to tomhartman.com, click live chat. It'll take you in there. Welcome, by the way, to KBBR, our newest affiliate in Coos Bay, Oregon. I'm very pleased to have you with us if you're listening on that station. Our toll-free number, 1-866-889-8894. If Saddam Hussein had no weapons of mass destruction, as was presented to the Senate yesterday, and we're going to get into that, or the House and Senate, Congress. Many are asking, then, who forged or wildly misinterpreted the spy satellite photos that Colin Powell presented as proof of these programs to the United Nations? Now, this would be a forgery scandal. I mean, Dan Rather's Rather Gate, the only one to get a gate, as John Stewart pointed out last night, seemed like a Sunday school prank. Apparently, though, it's happened before. And interestingly, that is the forgery of satellite photos to justify an American war has happened before. And interestingly, the last time it happened, it was Dick Cheney who used forged photos to convince our allies to participate in an attack against Saddam Hussein. One of the interesting side effects or benefits, I suppose, of living where I do, I'm broadcasting here live from high up in the Green Mountains of the People's Republic of Vermont. It's 2 hours door-to-door from my house to Montreal, although I'm in the United States. And you know, of course, I'm in central Vermont. But our local cable system carries CBC, the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation. So we get Canadian TV here. And last night, CBC broadcast nationwide on their program called The Fifth Estate. It celebrated, in fact, it was the 30th anniversary. It was the first show of the new season, 30th anniversary of this program. It's the Canadian equivalent of 60 Minutes. And on The Fifth Estate last night, they did a program, an hour-long program, which was an exposé of Dick Cheney. It was devastating. It was absolutely devastating. If this thing played in the United States, the Republicans would riot and Dick Cheney would be prosecuted. I mean, they literally pointed out crimes that Dick Cheney committed, criminal acts for which he could and if they are right, should be prosecuted. But a number of them, particularly when he was with Halliburton, but also as a member of Congress and with the Ford White House, just a whole lot of really shady deals. The website, by the way, you can find it at cbc.ca/fifth, F-I-F-T-H. And that'll get you to the show. They've got a whole web special on it. And perhaps the gravest charge in the documentary, particularly given the results of the Dulfer Report, is that then-Secretary of Defense Cheney, back in 91, when he was the elder Bush's Secretary of Defense, he was the guy who ran the Pentagon. He had the job that Rumsfeld has now. Used apparently forged satellite photographs to convince the Saudis that Saddam had 250,000 troops and thousands of tanks massed along the Saudi border. Now, how do we know this? Because he told them this. He flew to Saudi Arabia to show them the photos. They were so frightened by these pictures of these hundreds of thousands of 250,000 Iraqi soldiers on their border out in the desert, and all the tanks and everything, Saddam was getting ready to attack them, that they finally, after 30, 40, 50 years of resisting us having American soldiers on sacred Saudi soil, allowed us to base our soldiers there. The satellite photos, number one, have never been made public, and number two, Soviet satellite photos of the exact same area taken on the exact same day have been made public, were made public by the CBC, the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation, at the time in 1991. They went to the White House and they said, you know, is there something wrong with these pictures? The White House wouldn't comment on it. And those photos show that there were no tanks and no soldiers. And in fact, there has never been ever any evidence presented that Saddam represented any threat to Saudi Arabia at all or had any intention of attacking them. He would have been crazy to attack them. But Dick Cheney had these apparently doctored pictures, flew to Saudi Arabia, and got them to let us base our soldiers there. And then in 1998, Osama bin Laden, a good Saudi Wahhabist, a good believer in the true Islam, it's really not the true Islam. This is the right-wing crank version of Islam. Declares war on the United States. Why? Because we have soldiers in Saudi Arabia. Because the Holy Land is defiled by women driving and not wearing the veil and men drinking alcohol. And bin Laden says, if you don't get those soldiers out of Saudi Arabia, I'm going to hit you in the United States. His declaration was printed in the United States, in the New York Times. It was, you know, widely discussed back in 98. And he began planning for 9/11. Because of the soldiers that we had in Saudi Arabia that were put there, apparently as the result in 1991, according to CBC last night, as a result of a lie that Dick Cheney told the Saudi government. Which raises the question, you know, if Dick Cheney had doctored photos, spy photos, before, did he do it again? What were the pictures that Colin Powell was showing, the satellite spy photos that he was showing the United States? Were they doctored? Had somebody forged them? How could we have gotten this so wrong unless somebody had a hand in this, in making this happen? I mean, this is really significant. It sounds like conspiracy theory stuff, but this is the CBC, the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation. This is not, you know, some left-wing a website or something. I think this is, you know, this is a really serious issue. Real serious issue. Moving along, I can't call into your show as I listen to it from Norway, writes Kent in Norway. If you can read emails from foreigners on the air, maybe you'd like to read the following and comment on it. I'm torn. I want the U.S. to change for real. Four more years of horror might force such a change, he writes, by making it possible for someone like Dean or better, Nader or Kucinich to get elected. But it's scary. Kerry would be saner and more decent, but I fear he will not represent real change. I trust you, Tom, so I'm leaning toward the latter. But here's my question. Do you really think Kerry will undo the corporate piracy so effectively perpetrated by Paul Bremer against the sovereign state of Iraq? And he says, P.S., my whole family still listens to you here in Norway. You're our American hero, man. Jefferson would be proud of you. Thank you, Ken. My answer to the question, frankly, I don't know. I am hopeful. I am hopeful. Here's one of the things that makes me the most hopeful. There is a battle going on for the heart and soul of the Democratic Party right now. And it's one that's not much discussed in the media or the press. And I say this as a complete outsider. I am not a Democrat. In the 2000 election, I voted all over the map. I voted for Ralph Nader for president. I voted for a Democrat, Pat Leahy, for the Senate. I voted for a Republican, Jim Jeffords, for the Senate here in Vermont. So, you know, go figure. But it's just obvious as an observer from the outside that there is this very clear battle going on for the heart and soul of the Democratic Party, and it's been going on since basically 91, 92, the rise of Bill Clinton, as a result of the Democratic Leadership Council, the DNC, and the DLC is like the corporate wing of the Democratic Party. They're the let's get in bed with corporations, let's take corporate money, let's work for corporate interests. They'll give us cash, we can suck up to them, we'll get more power. Won't it be great? And it's the Republican light, in my opinion, version of the Democrats. And you've got that group versus the far end. Versus the Kucinich, Paul Wellstone, group within the Democratic Party. So you got the whole spectrum there in the Democratic Party. In the Republican Party, by and large, the spectrum is gone. There are a few moderates, Lincoln Chafee, Susan, what's her name, in Maine. But by and large, it's been wiped out. But in the Democratic Party, there is this battle, and John Kerry. One of the things that gives me hope is the fact that John Kerry has refused, throughout his 20 years in the Senate, has refused to take money from political action committees run by corporations. Now, this is no small thing. So far for this cycle, the 2004 cycle, this is from factcheck.org, the group that Dick Cheney tells you to go check out. Senator Bill Frist, the multimillionaire Republican whose family made its billions by sucking the blood out of once public hospitals, turning them private, reported $1,022,063 in PAC donations for his 2004 campaign alone. That's over $1 million to Bill Frist in corporate PACs. Senator Mitch McConnell, a Republican whip, over $1.3 million. And now the Democrats are getting into this act, too. Tom Daschle got $1.5 million from corporate PACs. Harry Reid, the Democratic whip, $1.58 million. John Kerry, zero. The Republicans, ironically enough, and you get this in response to this article on factcheck.org titled Internet Attack Ad Says Kerry Got Most Special Interest Money of Any Senator. He didn't, and Bush got lots more. That's the headline. And they point out, while it's true that Kerry got $640,000 over the past 15 years from individual lobbyists, they point out the Bush campaign itself has raised $960,000 from individual lobbyists in the past year. In fact, in the last year, the Bush campaign has raised $960,000 from lobbyists, Kerry $234,000, and then, they don't get into the PAC money. So. But Kerry has refused to take money from PACs. So I see that as a good sign. I just don't know. I have come to the conclusion that John Kerry has the potential to be as brilliant a president as Franklin Roosevelt was. But whether he will realize that potential, whether he still has that fire in his belly, whether the Democratic Party will allow it to happen is an open guess. But I'd rather take a chance on that than take a chance on George Bush throwing us into World War III. Creating the Holocaust, the end of days that he seems to be so enthusiastic about. I'm going to get into the Dick Cheney stuff here. We've got some fascinating stuff there. I've got the website, www.cbc, as in Canadian Broadcasting Corporation, .ca, as in Canada, /fifth, F-I-F-T-H, for the CBC report. It's 20 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com. Or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Visit iowapeace.com for books on justice and peace. The Last Liberal Outlaw is Mike Palasek's new novel. Chuck Gregory with BlueEar.com had this to say. Palasek is at his best when writing about small-town America. It's a place he clearly loves, even as he pokes fun at its quirks and reveals the sickness that lies just below the surface. It's a place he knows, and he shares his knowledge in delightfully original ways, even as he cries out for change. We haven't had a writer like Palasek since Kurt Vonnegut was at his peak. Mike is an Iowa author, former federal prisoner for peace, small-town newspaper reporter, seminarian, and nominee for the U.S. House of Representatives in the Iowa Democratic Party 2000 election. For more information and more about Mike's other novels, visit iowapeace.com. The revolution won't be televised, but you can read about it. The Last Liberal Outlaw, A New American Revolution, is happening in the heartland.
For more than 27 years, the progressive magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. Author and broadcast personality Studs Terkel calls In These Times his bi-weekly tonic. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. 1-800-827-0270.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. We've all heard the phrase, use it or lose it. Well, according to a study just published in the journal Neurology, people with mentally challenging work seem to be less likely to develop Alzheimer's disease than those working in physically demanding jobs. Researchers suggest lifelong stimulus maintains a reserve of brain cells and strengthens connections between neurons.
The last hours of ancient sunlight, the fate of the world, and what we can do before it's too late is Tom Hartman's stunning wake-up call to humanity. Conversations with God author Neil Donald Walsh says this about the book.
Quote it everywhere. Buy 10 books and give them away. Don't let this action go unheard. You may feel like a voice in the wilderness, but it is your voice we're waiting to hear. Yours is the crucial vote. You are the determining factor. We reach critical mass when we reach you, and you choose to reach others with the simple message of this book. Let us act at last in the best interest of all. Then the sun will shine another day, and another still, and life will not merely go on, but achieve its highest expression, its grandest glory, its greatest joy. Can we give this gift to our children? Please say yes.
The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late by Tom Hartman. Available in bookstores everywhere.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
I love my country so much, man. Like an exasperating friend. Dum, 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 dum.
And welcome back. 24 and a half minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Amazing things with the Michigan absentee ballot. This, if you go to TomHartman.com, you can actually see this. Go to TomHartman.com and click on the message boards. And on the message boards, go to the one about the elections. It's called 2004 election or whatever message board. Top message has a photo, an actual scan of the Michigan absentee ballot. And it's one of these things where you fill in, there's this arrow that's broken in the middle, and you fill it in with a pen or a pencil, and then you mail it in, and they optically scan them. And with the parties and all the other races, the arrows point right to the right place. But under presidential, the first, it says George W. Bush and Dick Cheney, and then there's no arrow next to it. And then you go down to John Kerry, John Edwards, and there's the first arrow. And so it's like, you know, well, what does that mean? Well, if you look down at the bottom, you find that the last arrow doesn't point to the last candidate. It points to the next category. In other words, what's happened is that the arrows are offset. It's the same thing that happened in Texas and Florida with the touchscreen machines, in particular in Florida, where when people pushed for Jeb Bush's opponent, the machine recorded a vote for Jeb Bush. This happened in many, many counties in Florida. It was well documented. It happened a lot in Texas as well in 2000 and 2002. And the touchscreen voting machine manufacturers said, well, it's a misaligned touchscreen. This is misaligned arrows. So if you highlight the arrow that points to John Kerry, you're actually voting for George Bush in the presidential ballot, on the absentee ballot from Michigan. Apparently, somebody has blown the whistle on these things, and they're now being reprinted. But how did this happen in the first place? Who's responsible for proofreading these things? This is outrageous. You can see this on our website. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Ron in Tucson, Arizona on the line. Hey, Ron, welcome to the program.
Hi, Tom. Tom, for the first time in my 59 years on this earth, I'm really afraid, and I'll tell you what happened and why I'm afraid.
Okay.
I pull up next to a major from the Davis Moffett Air Force Base here in Tucson with Bush stickers all over his car, and I said to him, you know, how many thousands of troops is it going to have to take? 2,000, 3,000 dead, 4,000 dead? And I said, when will you guys be happy? He says, whatever it takes to do the job. And then this young gal who was like about 20 years old tops, this morning I said to her, are you really for Bush? She said, yes. I said, well, we've got two more paraplegics and one more dead. And she goes, oh, well. I mean, it's scary. These people absolutely do not care. Human life means nothing anymore.
Yeah, I don't think it's so much, Ron, that they don't care. I think it's that they believe that, as between 30 and 40% of Americans do, that Saddam Hussein had something to do with those airplanes that crashed into the towers. And, of course, he had nothing to do with them. They believe that he represented a threat, perhaps a nuclear holocaust threat to America, and we learn now he represented absolutely no threat. They have believed the lies of this administration. That's the problem. I don't think that they're bad people. I don't think that they're stupid people. I think they're misinformed.
Tom, can I say one thing, too?
Sure.
I also, you know, I really get afraid when the church has failed in its job of teaching people the value of human life. That's where they should be teaching people.
Yeah, and what's so ironic is that, you know, abortion is such a huge wedge issue, and,
right.
You know, on the right. I mean, it's just absolutely mind-bogglingly ironic. In fact, I want to play a clip from Cindy Sheehan right after the next break for you that I think you're going to find rather startling.
Thanks, Tom.
Thanks a lot for the call, Ron. Good to hear from you. Our number 1-866-889-8894. The election in Australia going down to the wire, reported in today's Wall Street Journal, a statistical dead heat in the polls, Prime Minister John Howard versus the Labor Party, the Mark Latham. It looks like Latham might win, and Latham is basically campaigning on a promise to pull the country's 850 troops from Iraq by the end of this year. He's also suggested he will be more likely to question U.S. foreign policy in the future, especially if it involves pursuing terrorists far from Australian shores. We have not only split the world against us, but we've caused our very closest allies to essentially say, we don't believe you anymore. The incredible damage that has been done to us, done to the United States of America, to you and me, to our reputation, a reputation that has stood fairly well for 230 years, by this one administration. It is absolutely mind-boggling. 29 minutes past the hour.
Can you imagine a world in which all kids live healthy, safe, productive, and prosperous lives? Well, that world is within our grasp, and there's a way to reach it. It's called Ecolonomics. And to learn more, just pull up DennisWeaverNow.com and learn how to get a free report of our Ecolonomics educational program and how together we can build a world of prosperity without pollution. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
Senator John Kerry has expressed that if elected, he would roll back President George W. Bush's tax cut for the wealthy. The administration has criticized the move, saying it would be detrimental to small businesses. Vice President Dick Cheney commented on the issue during Tuesday's vice presidential debate.
A great many of our small businesses pay taxes under the personal income taxes rather than the corporate rate. And about 900,000 small businesses will be hit if you do, in fact, do what they want to do with the top bracket.
According to the Nonpartisan Tax Policy Center, Kerry plans to roll back tax cuts for those making more than $200,000, but at the same time would create new tax cuts specifically aimed at small businesses. The center calculates that less than 450,000 small businesses would be affected by the overall rollback, 400,000 less than the number quoted by Cheney. The LA Times recently gave an example of one individual who benefits from the Bush tax cut. Lynn Cheney, wife of the vice president, as the owner of a consulting firm where she is the sole employee, declared herself a small business last year and received a tax break of nearly $50,000.
Hotel managers say their lockout of striking San Francisco workers will last indefinitely. Over 1,400 workers at four downtown hotels are on strike. In response, the San Francisco Hotel Multi-Employer Group locked out 2,600 non-striking workers at 10 other hotels. Unite Here Local 2 president Mike Casey.
Playing hardball because they're global corporations and they're used to getting their way and they aren't used to having to sit down as equals across the bargaining table from people.
Casey said workers are trying to protect health and pension benefits, cut workloads, and get more pay.
Locating the owner of a glass slipper is not the most pressing matter in the Magic Kingdom these days. At the grand opening of a new World of Disney store in New York City, more than 60 members of the Services Trade Council Union that represents workers ranging from ticket takers to costume characters at Disney parks and hotels in Florida handed out leaflets complaining of drawn-out negotiations with park officials. Negotiations have been going on for more than 6 months. The employees are concerned because the proposed contract eliminates some overtime benefits, increases health care costs, and eliminates a pension plan for new hires. Disney World spokeswoman Jackie Polak complained of the protests in New York, saying time would have been better spent at the negotiation table than protesting in a different state. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. All the attention given to Halliburton and their no-bid contract in Iraq would make you think that it is not a regular practice. But a new report from the Center of Public Integrity reveals that at least $362 billion was spent on no-bid contracts by the Pentagon since 1998. But the Pentagon did not stop there, rewarding $255 billion in cost-plus contracts that allow companies to spend as much as they deem necessary on a job, including an agreed-upon profit.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit Labor Radio.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
I'm dreaming on a night.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. You have seen or heard, if you've watched any TV, particularly if you live in the swing states, but I believe this has been on all the cable networks all over, because I live in Vermont, which is definitely not a swing state, and we're seeing it here on CNN. These Swift Boat and POW Families for Truth ads, where they're now rolling out war widows or the wives of POWs from the 60s to attack John Kerry. And now on the other side, on the Democratic side, or actually it's just sort of on the anti-Bush side, let's say, because this is a group not aligned or affiliated with the Democratic Party in any way. There's a new group called RealVoices.org, R-E-A-L-V-O-I-C-E-S.org. And They're going to start rolling out an ad. In fact, they're doing a fundraiser right now to try and get money for this ad. And they're going to be rolling this ad out apparently starting Friday, in battleground states, key battleground states. And it's going to feature a woman by the name of Cindy Sheehan. Cindy Sheehan lost her son Casey in the Iraq War back in April. On April 4th, I believe it was. Yeah, April 4th of this last year. And she was interviewed, and she just kind of, you know, goes on the record and tells her story. And it's tough to listen to. It's only 40 seconds. I'm going to share it with you in just a minute. But this is going to be an ad. It's going to be running on TV stations all over the country. And the folks who are putting it together, they said, before we decided to air this ad in a big way, we talked to Ms. Sheehan to make sure that she understood how difficult the press attention she could get from this would be. She's a very brave woman. She simply said, they can't hurt me more than I've already been hurt. If she's up for it, we are. Let's help Cindy Sheehan be heard. And so this is the face of war. This, by the way, I'll tell you about her meeting with George Bush after this. Here's Cindy Sheehan in her own voice.
Sheehan, you don't have to go. His sergeant said, Sheehan, you don't have to go because my son was a mechanic. He was a Humvee mechanic. And Casey said, where my chief goes, I go. And he knew what had to be done. He died in his best friend's arms in Iraq. I imagined it would have hurt if one of my kids was killed, but I never thought it would hurt this bad. Especially someone so honest and brave as Casey, my son. When you haven't been honest with us, when you and your advisors rushed us into this war, how do you think we felt when we heard the Senate report that said there was no link between Iraq and 9/11.
Cindy Sheehan. The group RealVoices.org is going to be running this ad. MoveOnPAC.org is trying to help them raise some funds for it. She met with President Bush, who called her mom. He calls everybody by nicknames. He won't use people's names. And he said, well, mom, how are you doing? And she said, you can't imagine what it's like to lose a child, and you don't want to go there. And he said, no, I don't. And that was that. So Cindy Sheehan, the true voice, this is the true voice of war. Another interesting, very interesting clip, I think, is, well, actually, let's move along with this. Here's this on the Senate yesterday, the discussion about this whole thing. Charles Dalfour. You know, why did Cindy lose her son? Charles Dalfour, the CIA's, you know, number one guy to figure out what's happening with weapons of mass destruction, replaced David Kaye, and he gives his report. And here are a few comments. First, Ted Kennedy.
What would you say on a scale of 0 to 100, what is the likelihood that we'll ever find the stockpiles of weapons of mass destruction?
And here's Dolfer's response.
I think the prospects of finding significant stockpile is, I don't know, you know, less than 5%.
And then Senator Carl Levin, the Democrat of Michigan, had a few pithy comments.
The administration's case for going to war rested on the twin arguments that Saddam Hussein had existing stockpiles of weapons of mass destruction, and that he might give weapons of mass destruction to al-Qaeda to attack us. So the fundamental conclusion means that the administration's two major arguments for going to war against Iraq were incorrect.
It's a tough one.
There was a risk. A real risk.
This is recent, by the way.
That Saddam Hussein would pass weapons or materials or information to terrorist networks.
This is George Bush yesterday.
In the world after September the 11th, that was a risk we could not afford to take.
In other words, shoot first, ask questions later. You know, so you cause a war, so Cindy's kid dies, so the world hates us. Doesn't really matter. Shoot first, ask questions later. This doesn't work for me. I'm sorry. And I don't think it works for most Americans. I think most Americans are saying, "Hey, wait a minute, enough of this already. We're simply not going to accept this anymore." I mean, this is beyond the pale. And in fact, you know, this is part of the debate that happened in the Senate yesterday. There's some real outrage that took place, particularly, you know, one dialogue between Ted Stevens and Dick Durbin, which we'll get to in just a second. But this is here's of course, you know, George W. talking about this stuff here. Let me just share this with you.
First, I'm asked why Iraq is different from other countries or regimes that also have terrible weapons.
Good question.
While there are many dangers in the world, the threat from Iraq stands alone.
Turns out it didn't.
Because it gathers the most serious dangers of our age in one place.
Actually, it turns out all that Iraq gathered in one place was 10% of the world's oil.
If we know Saddam Hussein has dangerous weapons today, and we do, does it make any sense for the world to wait to confront him as he grows even stronger and develops even more dangerous weapons?
And so now we learn not only was he not growing stronger, he was growing weaker day by day as a result of the sanctions. So Dick Durbin and Ted Stevens went at it yesterday in the United States Senate, and I thought this was a fascinating exchange. Just Dick Durbin, a Democrat from Illinois, Ted Stevens, Republican from Alaska, and just a fascinating insight. I'm going to play it straight through. It's almost 2 minutes into what's going on in the Senate right now. I mean, this is ripping apart the United States, and it's happening all over the world. I mean, this debate happening in England, Tony Blair in danger, John Howard in danger in Australia, Poland just announced that they're going to pull out most of their troops by the end of next year, or all of their troops by the end of next year. They're going to start pulling back. I mean, we've got a serious problem here, and this is how it's being
played out. This administration is in denial. Denial when it comes to the reality of Iraq.
This is Dick Durbin.
Would the Senator like to yield there?
No, I'm not yield until I'm completed my statement, and then I'll be happy to yield.
But Ted Stevens is going to talk anyway.
We had the same conclusion with regard to the Air Force. We were told that he had destroyed a series of airplanes. Later, we found him buried in the desert. A whole series of airplanes, the whole airplane buried, were capable of being dug up and brought up and used. Now, we haven't found the weapons of mass destruction yet. This senator believes he had them.
And he still believes in the tooth fairy.
Now, this idea that somehow or other the president or the vice president have lied, I'm tired of hearing this disrespect for the presidency and vice president of the United States. And I'll be willing to debate any time, what happened in Iraq.
Yeah, this is Ted Stevens. He's doing the righteous indignation routine.
Frankly, a dialogue between two senators is...
This is Dick Durbin again.
...something close to, perilously close to debate in the Senate, which we hardly ever have.
And
having said that...
A wrap-up.
I don't believe that disagreeing with the policies of an administration is disrespectful. In fact, I think it is part of the national debate which makes America so unique. I don't believe it is disrespectful to say that the information given by the President, the Vice President, the Secretary of Defense, and the Secretary of State was wrong and misleading. It was.
It definitely.
But to say the President was wrong because he relied on the same intelligence we relied upon.
This is Ted Stevens again. And by the way, the President did not rely on the same intelligence the Senate did, as the CBC pointed out so well last night, and several senators have. But anyhow, we'll let Ted Stevens continue his rant here.
I think it's a faulty argument. And it should not happen to the floor of the Senate in a political session where we're trying to destroy the reputation the president deserves for having the guts to do what Clinton didn't have the guts to do.
It was all Clinton's fault, yeah.
It is our obligation to have an open, honest national debate about the foreign policy of this country, which involves families far and wide in Illinois, Alaska, and around the United States.
Amen. Amen. 1-866-889-8894. Let's take a few phone calls here. Ben in Grand Rapids, Michigan's on the line. Hey, Ben, welcome to the program.
How you doing, Tom?
Great. What's up?
I was just listening to that, and I don't understand how he can say that he was disrespecting the president when the president's basically disrespecting all of the United States by not letting the truth out. And I saw one of the best pieces of art and truth I've ever seen in my life last night, and it's Fahrenheit 9/11. And I'm sure you've seen it. And
yeah, I saw it when it first came out.
There's too many connections to the oil companies, and it just frightened me. You know, I mean, that people don't see this, and it just amazes me. And the other thing was, it's a town hall debate tomorrow night, and I just hope somebody asks a tough question and doesn't let him out of it.
Yeah, good luck. You know, dream on, Ben. These are not presidential debates. I think Lou Dobbs is right when he calls them presidential presentations.
Exactly.
And, you know, it's
scary.
Yeah, it is. And
thank you, Tom.
Thank you, Ben.
Have a great day.
You too. And those were the terms that the Democrats had to agree to in order to get three debates. I mean, they basically rolled over on everything in order to get any debates at all. To get that third one. 1-866-889-8894. A telephone number. Rick in Nevada's on the line. Hey, Rick. Welcome to the program.
Hey, Tom, I can't help but think, back to the Bush Senior's administration there, that, I think George Bush here kind of has, more than anything, a vendetta, you know?
You think it's proving his daddy wrong?
Oh, yeah. I mean, he watched the whole thing and all this stuff, you know, and it's just... I drive all over the country, you know, and I talk to, you know, all these guys at the truck stops, and I get into it with them, you know, and it just amazes me on how ignorant people can actually be.
Yeah, it's pretty remarkable. Did you see, by the way, Rick, the look on Bush's face during the last debate when Kerry quoted Bush's father? He looked like he wanted to say, okay, let's go mano to mano, you know, like he did to his dad when he was drunk way back. It's like he wanted to pick a fist fight. I mean, he looked genuinely furious, you know, just the mention of his father.
I mean, I just can't, you know, nobody really ever fully brings it up, you know, to compare the two, but it just amazes me on talking to everybody on some of the comments they make and stuff, you know.
I also thought it was interesting how George W. Bush would not allow his father to speak at the Republican convention. When he was the last, from my recollection, he was the last Republican president, wasn't he?
Yeah. And you know, they say all this about Clinton this, Clinton that, you know, and then the whole service record, you know. Oh, I was, you know, in Vietnam and this, that, and the other, and they're attacking. You know, and I got friends of mine that are Navy SEALs. What makes them more qualified just because they were in the service, or even less qualified because they were in the service? What does that have to do with anything?
Well,
who cares?
To some extent, what you're seeing is that in the here's where I think it matters. In the administration right now, in this run-up to war, the only guy who was cautioning, who was warning and urging caution was Colin Powell, the guy who'd actually seen people die on the field of battle. All the rest of them were chicken hawks. All the rest of them had gotten their deferrals or, you know, hadn't been eligible or whatever, you know, hadn't served. And so I think it does matter. Dwight Eisenhower in 1952 campaigned as a general on his main campaign statement was peace. Eisenhower is going to bring peace. He's going to end the war in Korea. And so, I think that there is something to be said for military service if the issue that the nation is facing is war. I think that there is something to be said for it. Rick, I got to move along. I appreciate the call. Good to hear from you. Let's go to Jim in Murfreesboro, Illinois. Hey, Jim, listening on WINI there?
Hey, Tom, how's it going? Could you briefly speak about the debate Scott Ritter brought to the table pre-war? Thank you.
Sure. Jim, what specifically do you mean? You're talking about Scott Ritter saying that he destroyed all the anything even close to a weapon of mass destruction that he could find in 97 and 98, and that they had sounds like Jim is gone. And then toward the end there, 98, it looked like there were a few buildings. Scott Ritter was on this program last year. He shared this story. He was the head weapons inspector for the United Nations in 1998. And of course, one of the urban legends is that Saddam kicked out the weapons inspectors. Didn't happen. Bill Clinton pulled out the weapons inspectors in 98, and George Bush pulled the weapons inspectors out in 2003 so that he could begin, in both cases, so that they could begin bombing Baghdad, you know, begin bombing Iraq. And Ritter had identified a few spots where he said, you know, they're not playing straight with us in these locations, these few buildings. And so Clinton went in and bombed them. You know, took them out. And it turns out that was it. You know, what we found out yesterday in the testimony before Congress of our new CIA inspector, Charles Dalthor, was that was it. Clinton actually did get the last of it, and there wasn't much left at that point. And basically since 91, since the Gulf War, nothing had been created. Another interesting thing in the news Dick Cheney had, you know, made his famous, you know, the first time I met you thing.
Now, in my capacity as vice president, I am the president of the Senate, the presiding officer. I'm up in the Senate most Tuesdays when they're in session. The first time I ever met you was when you walked on the stage tonight.
Now, it could be that the reason why is because when he's in the Senate on Tuesdays, it's to chair a Republican lunch. That the number of times that Cheney has actually showed up as president of the Senate in the last 4 years is twice. Two times. And oddly, John Edwards has served as president of the Senate twice in those 4 years. It's a rotating position. Edwards has shown up as much as Dick Cheney in the United States. Well, far more, actually, but as president of the Senate. We'll get into that in just a minute. 10 minutes before the hour.
Bonjour, my name is Véronique Raskin. I founded the Organic Wine Company 25 years ago. If you love wine and have not tried our French wines, you are in for a treat. Nowadays, people everywhere are buying organic fruits and vegetables because they know they taste better. Organic grapes are so luscious. When turned into wine, you can really taste the difference with every sip. So our wines are delicious and eco-friendly. So I want to make it easy for you to try them out. Call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE and I will send you 3 of my favorite organically grown French wines at half off the regular price. That's just $25 plus shipping. Isn't that magnifique? I think so. If you don't share my enthusiasm, I'll gladly refund your money. So take me up on my offer and call me at 1-888-ECO-WINE. ECOWINE. Au revoir.
Now, it's time for This Billionaire Moment.
When human rights groups discover that our third world sweatshops employ a lot of child labor, they're always horrified. These children should be in school, they stridently insist. But why would these kids be better off sitting at a desk learning about social studies than working on our assembly lines? Schools are supposed to prepare you for the future. In most of the places we do business, the only future these moppets have is on an assembly line. What better way for them to prepare than in our sweatshop apprentice program? The kids get paid a special introductory wage while they learn all the skills they'll need for the rest of their short, miserable lives. And those little hands can do some really intricate stitching, believe me. This has been Xenophobe for This Billionaire Moment.
This Billionaire Moment is brought to you by BillionairesForBush.com.
Here comes the billionaire!
Hi, I'm David Orrick. Do you have a dust mask? Well, if you use a bagless vacuum and you're sensitive to dust, a leading consumer magazine products testing magazine warns you should wear a dust mask. But here's a better idea. Try my newest hypoallergenic 8-pound Auric XL risk-free for 30 days. It uses triple-walled disposable filter bags. Try emptying a bagless vacuum and see what happens. Dust gets all over your hands and face and back into the room and on the kitchen counter. And you get to breathe it in? I believe a vacuum should capture the dust, not your lungs. That's why with my Auric XL, the filter bags are self-sealing. What goes in the bag stays in the bag, even when you empty it. So try my hypoallergenic 8-pound Auric XL free for 30 days. Call 1-800-989-4200. 1-800-989-4200. Then if you still want a bagless vacuum, I'll send you a dust mask to wear.
A group of biologists wants to connect corridors of wilderness that cross North America. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. Imagine wilderness corridors that stretch from Canada to Mexico, unbroken chains of forest, prairie, wetland, and stream. That's the vision of the Wildlands Project, a group of conservation biologists and wilderness advocates. They argue that wildlife needs more than a patchwork of preserved areas and that migrating species and large predators especially need room to roam. Chip Ward writes about the project in his new book, Hope's Horizon.
So the Wildlands Project is now identifying critical habitat and buffer areas and corridors for wildlife to migrate, and they're putting together government agents, private landowners, land trusts, every different partner that they can find out there, and trying to get them to set goals for putting aside a much, much bigger portion of land all across the continent so that someday, if a large carnivore was inclined, it could travel from Canada all the way down to Mexico.
The project started in 1991 and spent its first decade shoring up its scientific case for wildlife corridors. Ward says the next goal is to build public support for the idea and persuade other conservation organizations to join the effort.
The Wildlands Project just rolled up his sleeves and said, let's start educating people, let's start putting people together, and let's start remapping the continent. And people who are inclined will use those maps to try to get together and figure out how they can save habitat and make for healthier landscapes.
Ward says project supporters know they face an uphill struggle to see their vision become a reality. They figure it will take about 100 years to create wildlife corridors that connect across North America. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
Democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartman.
I am young, but I remember it was not so long ago. In a land so bright and shining, this is how the story goes.
And welcome back. 5 minutes before the hour, Tom Hartman here with you. George W. Let's stop that. Okay. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Taxi driver number 12 in Santa Fe, New Mexico on the line. Hey, number 12.
Tom.
What's up?
I usually respect everything you say, even if I disagree with you, but I'm going to have to take it with one thing you said yesterday. That was a big sore thumb, and it was totally incorrect.
Go for it.
That was, you said that the First Amendment is to protect the state from the church, and that is absolutely erroneous. The purpose of all those amendments is to protect people, both singular and plural, from the state. And we're talking about specifically IRS agents or whoever, yanking the tax-exempt status of churches. And I don't want to talk about that right now, but specifically the purpose of every single one of those amendments is to protect people, both individual and plural. The state does not need to be protected. George Bush's administration, which is the state, does not need to be protected. It needs to be put on, public display, open up for scrutiny, and put on a short leash. But it does not need to be protected from
anything. I'll give you that. I'll agree with you. I agree.
The only thing I want to say is, maybe you misspoke or whatever, but it just...
The point I was trying to make, I had been reading the letters of Jefferson, and in fact, there's a chapter about this in my book, What Would Jefferson Do?, about his letters about religion, and his talk, and he was constantly being harassed by members of the clergy who wanted him to promote religion, and he consistently refused to. And he made the comment over and over and over again that if you're going to have a state of, by, and for we the people, now, of course, of, by, and for we the people is Lincoln's phrase, but, essentially, if you're going to have a nation, a state, a government that represents the people, then that is the people. And that institution of government and the people themselves have to be protected from the overgrown authority, the power of institutionalized religion, just like they have to be protected from the power of kingdoms and the power of the feudal lords. Those were the three tyrannies that Jefferson identified. And in fact, there had been, Massachusetts, large chunks of Massachusetts had been under the control of ministers, of churches, rather than governments of the people. And that's what he wanted to prevent.
The word you're being institutionalized religion. That's why the First Amendment. The thing is, it's like the Constitutionalists say one thing, the Second Amendment. Some people, the separatists and church staters, say something about the First Amendment. There's two parts of the First Amendment.
Yeah, I know. Number 12, number one, you're breaking up, and number two, we're at the end of the hour. But I think that I suspect we're saying the same thing. If we're not, I'll agree with you. The whole point of the Bill of Rights is Bill of Human Rights, not Bill of Church Rights or State Rights, certainly not State Rights. So I'll agree with you. I appreciate the call. 2 minutes before the hour, it's the Tom Hartman radio program. Defending America from the conservative weapons of mass deception.
You
have been listening to the Tom Hartman Program, check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Do you want to find out what the invasion of Iraq was really about? Read the new illustrated book, We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. Once you've read We the People, you'll understand why conservatives are trying to bankrupt government and how perpetual war is used as a political strategy in the United States. You'll learn how our votes are in danger and what we must do about it. You'll discover why the Alien and Sedition Acts of 1798 matter today. Populist watchdog and national radio commentator Jim Hightower had this to say about We the People.
Not only does this book tell you what's really going on, but it even draws you a picture of it. Read, learn, and act.
We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. A compelling story of how a government by and for the people has been replaced by corporate domination. Fully illustrated by Neil Cohn, We the People issues a call to action in a most entertaining way. Available.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
Senator John Kerry has expressed that if elected, he would roll back President George W. Bush's tax cut for the wealthy. The administration has criticized the move, saying it would be detrimental to small businesses. Vice President Dick Cheney commented on the issue during Tuesday's vice presidential debate.
A great many of our small businesses pay taxes under the personal income taxes rather than the corporate rate. And about 900,000 small businesses will be hit if you do, in fact, do what they want to do with the top bracket.
According to the Nonpartisan Tax Policy Center, Kerry plans to roll back tax cuts for those making more than $200,000, but at the same time would create new tax cuts specifically aimed at small businesses. The center calculates that less than 450,000 small businesses would be affected by the overall rollback, 400,000 less than the number quoted by Cheney. The LA Times recently gave an example of one individual who benefits from the Bush tax cut. Lynn Cheney, wife of the vice president, as the owner of a consulting firm where she is the sole employee, declared herself a small business last year and received a tax break of nearly $50,000.
Hotel managers say their lockout of striking San Francisco workers will last indefinitely. Over 1,400 workers at four downtown hotels are on strike. In response, the San Francisco Hotel Multi-Employer Group locked out 2,600 non-striking workers at 10 other hotels. Unite Here Local 2 president Mike Casey.
Well, they're playing hardball because they're global corporations, and they're used to getting their way, and they aren't used to having to sit down as equals across the bargaining table from people.
Casey said workers are trying to protect health and pension benefits, cut workloads, and get more pay.
Locating the owner of a glass slipper is not the most pressing matter in the Magic Kingdom these days. At the grand opening of a new World of Disney store in New York City, more than 60 members of the Services Trade Council Union that represents workers ranging from ticket takers to costume characters at Disney parks and hotels in Florida handed out leaflets complaining of drawn-out negotiations with park officials. Negotiations have been going on for more than 6 months. The employees are concerned because the proposed contract eliminates some overtime benefits, increases health care costs, and eliminates a pension plan for new hires. Disney World spokeswoman Jackie Polak complained of the protests in New York, saying time would have been better spent at the negotiation table than protesting in a different state. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. All of the attention given to Halliburton and their no-bid contract in Iraq would make you think that it is not a regular practice. But a new report from the Center of Public Integrity reveals that at least $362 billion was spent on no-bid contracts by the Pentagon since 1998. But the Pentagon did not stop there, rewarding $255 billion in cost-plus contracts that allow companies to spend as much as they deem necessary on a job, including an agreed-upon profit.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
So, Jasper, how was your year?
Excellent. This administration gives the best returns ever.
Do tell.
Well, the money I paid to a lobbying firm in Washington brought in over $50 million in overseas contracts.
Oh, yes, lobbying pays.
Are you still into commodities, Max?
No, I'm funding politicians. My campaign contributions got me over $100 million worth of regulation waivers.
Well done, Max.
Today's wisest investment. Investments are in politics. Where are you throwing your money?
Easily paid for by billionairesforbush.com.
Time for another Gooberhead Award.
presented periodically to those in the news who have their tongues going 100 miles an hour but forgot to put their brains in gear. Today's goober is Michael Bloomberg, the billionaire mayor of the Big Apple. His honor was in the national spotlight during August's Republican National Convention in New York City, and the glare revealed some very ugly wrinkles inside his soul. Bloomberg showed himself to be stunningly callous to our country's most fundamental liberty, the right to assemble in public and speak out about any and all policies with which we disagree. He used the New York City police as a bludgeon to crack down on dissenters who were engaged in totally lawful protests. Then he asserted that every NYPD officer did a great job. Alex Pincus definitely disagrees. He wasn't even a protester, just a city resident who went out to a deli for some matzo ball soup and innocently walked into a police dragnet that was indiscriminately scooping up hundreds of people. Pincus asked an officer how to get out of the way. He was told, "Follow me," then was grabbed by the cops, handcuffed behind his back, forced to kneel for an hour before being tossed into a filthy makeshift cage topped with razor wire, where he was held for 25 hours without access to a lawyer. Bloomberg's police kept saying to him and all the others, "This is what you get for protesting." Oblivious to America's hard-won constitutional rights, the mayor later admitted that innocents were abused, but the gooberhead blamed the victims. "If you go to where the people are protesting and don't want to be part of the protest," he haughtily sniffed, "you're always going to run the risk that maybe you'll be tied up with it." Yeah, literally tied up. This is Jim Hightower saying, our liberties are not taken from us in one big bang of a coup, but slipped out from under us inch by inch by autocratic goobers like Bloomberg.
Larry King here. You've heard me talk about Ester C. Well, now you can get more from your vitamin E. Introducing the advanced protection of Ester E from the makers of Ester C. Ester E's breakthrough form protects its antioxidant strength until your body is ready to use it. So do what I do and get more from your E. Take new Ester E. E-S-T-E-R-E. Are you getting advanced protection from your vitamin E?
And now, look for new Ester E where fine vitamins are sold.
What if I told you that you could get cash back from your federal student loans? No, really. You can receive up to $1,000 cash rebate just from making your first six payments on time. Introducing College Loan Corporation's Reward. Now you can save up to 50% on your monthly payments, lock in the lowest interest rates in history, and you may be able to earn a significant rebate. That's cold hard cash in your pocket. To take advantage of this amazing offer, call 1-800-2-COLLEGE. That's 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you. Freeway Free Speech Day. Have you heard about this? This is October 13th. That's coming up. What is today, the 7th? Yeah, so that would be, I don't have a calendar in front of me. Anyhow, October 13th, whatever day of the week that is. On October 13th, hundreds of activists nationwide will post hand-painted signs on freeways across America critical of the war in Iraq and the Bush administration, reaching millions of voters in states from Maine to California. A nationwide media campaign will be launched to draw attention to the thousands of signs that will be posted on highway overpasses across the country. What do you want to bet that the cons are going to get out? They're going to say, "No, this is trespassing. This is illegal," and they're going to have the police out there stopping people from hanging signs. Oh, it's going to distract people. It's going to be a danger to traffic. You drive by one of these car washes, you know, the high school kids are out there holding it. "Oh, no, that's a distraction." I mean, isn't it the same? Well, we'll find out. This will be interesting to see. Highlight this new and powerful form of civic participation, say the organizers of Freeway Free Speech Day.
The primary goal of Freeway Free Speech Day, they say, is to stimulate the democratic process in the way it was originally intended, with each citizen having the power and freedom to express their political views directly to their fellow citizen. And they have a website for this, freewayblogger.com. And freewayblogger.com, they've got examples of the signs and all this kind of thing. Will these folks be declared terrorists because they're conspiring to put a message out? I mean, we know that if they were showing up for a Bush or Cheney event, they would be arrested unless they went to the free speech zone. This, you know, this weird thing that George W. Bush started when he was governor of Texas. Let's have a zone for free speech outside the state house. These people used to demonstrate out there. Well, let's herd them off. And now it's gone. I am, you know, the thing that amazes me the most is that more Americans aren't freaked out about free speech zones. I mean, how dare they? How dare they come along and say, yeah, you have the freedom to speak and say whatever you want over there in that cage with surrounded by guys with guns. The First Amendment says explicitly, Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof or abridging the freedom of speech or of the press or the right of the people peaceably to assemble and to petition the government for a redress of grievances. No laws. But you try showing up at one of these campaign events. You just try it. Ralph Nader, this interesting story, just a quick share with you. The funders of the Swift Boat Veterans for Truth, a right-wing PAC, have made thousands of dollars in campaign contributions to Ralph Nader, according to United Progressives for Victory, UP for Victory. United Progressives for Victory is a group of people who campaigned for Ralph Nader in 2000. And now they're saying, hey, if you liked Nader in 2000, you voted for him in 2000, don't vote for him this time. Please don't vote, because it's a vote for Bush. According to Federal Election Commission records, five major donors who have given $13,500 to Swift Boat Veterans for Truth, Derrett's attack ads, have also given Nader $7,500. And they go through the list of who these people are. And, you know, it's pretty deplorable that Bush, through his proxies, is doing this smear, said Nader, condemning the PAC. The Political Action Committee, this group of progressives. So anyway, it's the battle continues. What just boggles my mind? This happened just a couple days ago, right here in Vermont. It was in the Vermont newspapers. Ralph Nader showed up at one of the universities here. There's a whole bunch of colleges. I think it was Vermont College, but I could be wrong. And he showed up at one of the colleges and actually packed the auditorium with students. And I would be willing to bet that he gave the same speech that I found so many copies of on the internet and that one of my kids attended and heard, where he goes into his rant about, you know, they have third parties in Israel, they have third parties in South Africa, they have third parties in Germany, they have third parties in France, they have third parties in... Why can't we have third parties here? Why do the Republicans and Democrats want to conspire to prevent third parties from participating in the American political process? And you notice somebody who doesn't understand how American politics, how our political system came about, who doesn't understand the struggles of writing the Constitution, it sounds like it makes sense. Why is it that there are active third parties in these other countries? And yet whenever we try to have a third party here in the United States, it harms the major party to which it's closest. You know, Pat Buchanan running on a third party ticket harms the Republicans. Ralph Nader running on an independent ticket harms the Democrats. Why would that be? Well, it turns out that the founders, you know, saw this problem. In Federalist Number 10, James Madison goes into this long rant begging people not to form political parties. This was in 1787, before the Constitution was ratified, when they were trying to encourage ratification. And he said, you know, please don't form what he called factions. Please don't form political parties. Because if you form more than two of them, then we will have non-democratic, anti-democratic outcomes to elections. If there are only two parties, then, you know, you can have 50-51%. And the other party, you know, you have one majority party, one minority party. That's at least democratic.
But if you have three parties, odds are that you're going to have somebody in power who didn't get more than half the vote. And that's not consistent with the broad principles of democracy. And they couldn't figure out how to fix this. And so the only solution they could come up with was to beg people not to form political parties. Well, that was in 1787. By 1795, the Republicans had split off from the Federalists. The Democrats had split off from the Federalists. By 1796-97, Thomas Jefferson had pulled these two groups together, Vice President Jefferson, into one group, which was called the Democratic Republicans. They dropped the word Republican from their name in the 1820s, 1830s, and just called themselves the Democratic Party. To this day, Thomas Jefferson founded the oldest party in the history of the world, the oldest political party, the Democratic Party. Oddly, on WhiteHouse.gov, on the biographies of the presidents, it says that Thomas Jefferson founded the Republican Party, which didn't exist during his day, the modern-day Republican Party. Its first serious political national presidential candidate was Abraham Lincoln. It came about after the collapse of the Whigs in the late 1830s, early 1840s. But in any case, that was their solution. They said, please don't form political. Well, we've got them. It wasn't until 1861 that John Stuart Mill came along and said, hey, I've got an idea. How about proportional representation? How about instead of voting for a candidate, you vote for a party? So you would go to the polls and you'd say, okay, I'm going to vote Democrat, or I'm going to vote Republican, or I'm going to vote Green, or I'm going to vote. And then whatever the percentage of the vote a party gets, that's the percentage of seats in Congress that they get. So if you have 100 seats in the Senate, as we do, and your party got 30% of the vote, you get 30 seats. And you can make the decision about who you send. And, of course, the parties would tell you in advance who they're going to send. And if you get 50% of the vote, you get 50 seats. If you get 10% of the vote, you get 10 seats. And now you can have multiple parties. And that's how the whole rest of the world did it, because in 1860, there were only a handful of democracies in the world. With the exception of Greece and Australia, that's how everybody else in the world does it. And Greece has been having this problem. They keep getting, military juntas and get, problems. And Australia confronted it by putting into place their version of instant runoff voting, which is what we need to have in the United States. But and hopefully Nader's talking about it more, because I've written a couple of Common Dreams pieces about this that have, I know, gotten him royally upset about the fact that I think he's misleading people. Anyhow, let's go to the phones. 1-866, our telephone number, toll-free number, 1-866-889-8894. And Mark in Grand Rapids, Michigan's on the line. Hey, Mark, what's up?
How you doing, Tom?
I'm great, but I'll get better. How about you, Mark?
Okay, well, you got a great show, and I love it.
Thank you.
What I wanted to talk about was I live right in the neighborhood where the church that was mentioned yesterday,
the Nazarene Church, where the parsonage has a Bush Cheney sign out in front on tax-free property.
Correct. I live right in that neighborhood, and sure enough, I went down there and looked. And then I wanted to do some fact-checking, so I went online and went to a search engine and just put in Grand Rapids property tax assessment. And sure enough, here comes the property up, and it says it is tax-exempt.
So they're not paying taxes on it. So
no, they're not paying taxes.
But they're engaging in political activity.
Checking to make sure. Yeah. What was my point I want to make, it was very easy to do. It only took me a couple of minutes to check on this. And I encourage your listeners to go out, and if you see a property, this house looks, it just looks like a house. It doesn't look like it's part of the church.
Well, it is a house. It's the parsonage. It's
right.
Where the minister lives. The minister gets to live in a tax-free environment because his full-time job is being the head of the church, which, I'm not going to get into a debate about that, but in any case, that's the rules. So.
What I'd like to say is how many people are driving by houses that just look like houses that are actually parsonages? I know of another one in our neighborhood that's a whole block away from the church. Maybe we should all take a look. You see a Bush Cheney sign out there. It's near a church. Hey, go online. It only takes 15, 20 minutes.
Yeah, okay. Good one. And the other point, and thanks, Mark, for calling and sharing that with us. And the other point, and to tip my hat here to number 12 in New Mexico, this is true for not just churches. This is true for any organization that wants to be exempt from taxes. Any organization that says to we the people, what I'm doing is so important because it has to do with education, health, or religion, which are the categories for 501c3 nonprofits. What I'm doing is so important that I shouldn't have to pay taxes. And we agree.
We say, okay, you know, if you're running a hospital, shouldn't have to pay taxes. Or used to be, you know, if it's a nonprofit hospital. If you're running a home for abused kids, you shouldn't have to pay taxes. If you're running a school and it's nonprofit, you shouldn't have to pay taxes. If you're running a church, you shouldn't have to pay taxes. If it is involved with health, education, or religion, we have agreed collectively, we the people, through our elected representatives, have agreed those are things that are sufficiently important, they don't have to pay taxes. So we say, however, the price you're going to have to pay for not paying taxes is that you can't involve yourself in politics. Seems like a reasonable trade to me. And those are the rules. Very, very simple. But we've got, obviously, some folks who think that the rules don't apply to them. They just apply to other people. And in the midst of this now, you've got down in Florida, and this is the thing that stirred this all up to begin with. Down in Florida, you got the Republicans going into black churches. You know, white guys dressed up in suits looking very imposing going, we're here to make sure that you know that if you get engaged in any kind of political activity, you'll lose your tax-exempt status. And all of a sudden, the black churches are not inviting politicians to come speak, which is legal, as long as the politicians don't ask for their votes. And you know, there's this whole intimidation campaign going on in black communities in Florida right now, which has got a number of the African-American organizations really concerned. But apparently in white communities, churches think that they can do what they want. 20 minutes past the hour.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is a small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Waitsfield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Hi, I'm David Orrick. In vacuums, bagless is a dirty word. A leading consumer testing magazine warns, if you're sensitive to dust, avoid bagless vacuums. And if you own one, they advise you to wear a dust mask. I would never put the Orrick name on a bagless vacuum. They're filthy. My hypoallergenic Orrick XL uses triple-walled disposable filter bags. They hold four times more than the leading brand of bagless vacuums. What goes in the Orrick bag stays in the bag, including bacteria and viruses. Empty a bagless vacuum and the dust goes right back into the room you've just cleaned. Is this sanitary? Orrick cleans the air as it vacuums the floor. Try my 8-pound Orrick XL risk-free for 30 days. Call 1-800-989-4200, 1-800-989-4200. It's the clean alternative to bagless vacuum.
Bonjour, my name is Michel, and I founded the Organic Wine Company with my sister 25 years ago. If you love wine and have not tried our French wines yet, you are in for a treat. Nowadays, people everywhere are buying organic fruits and vegetables because they know they taste better. Organic grapes are so luscious that when turned into wine, you can really taste the difference. Our wines are delicious and eco-friendly, so I want to make it very easy for you.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Hey, California, where is your tax money going? To Walmart, of course. A new study released by UC Berkeley reveals that the low wages paid at Walmart stores forces employees to accept about $86 million annually in public assistance programs. That includes $32 million annually in health-related service and $54 million per year in services such as food stamps and subsidized housing. Walmart employees in that state earn on average 31% less than workers in the retail sector as a whole.
Visit iowapeace.com for books on justice and peace.
The Last Liberal Outlaw is Mike Palasek's new novel. Chuck Gregory with BlueEar.com had this to say. Palasek is at his best when writing about small-town America. It's a place he clearly loves, even as he pokes fun at its quirks and reveals the sickness that lies just below the surface. It's a place he knows, and he shares his knowledge in delightfully original ways, even as he cries out for change. We haven't had a writer like Palasek since Kurt Vonnegut was at his peak. Mike is an Iowa author, former federal prisoner for peace, small-town newspaper reporter, seminarian, and nominee for the U.S. House of Representatives in the Iowa Democratic Party 2000 election. For more information and more about Mike's other novels, visit iowapeace.com. The revolution won't be televised, but you can read about it. The Last Liberal Outlaw, A New American Revolution, is happening in the heartland.
Listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
It's becoming more precarious for failing to toe the line in what I believe in. Sounds like freedom to me.
And welcome back. 24 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. 24 and a half minutes. 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number if you'd like to call in. A lot of interesting news here I want to get to today as well. First, let's take a call from Deidre in Michigan. Hey, Deidre, welcome to the program. Oh, maybe not. Apparently, Deidre? No, Deidre is gone. Okay. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number in any case, if you'd like to call in. And the cheap labor right has declared war on American wage earners. This excellent email that I got from... I'm not sure. I don't have a name on here. It's just an email address. Undermining the eight-hour workday. Relaxing workplace safety, driving down American wages and living standards by encouraging wage competition with third-world cesspools, he says. Ah, Deidre's back. Hey, Deidre, welcome to the program.
Hello.
Hi.
I, for the heck of it, tried to call the O'Reilly Report and to talk about something I had seen and see if they had any comment or, you know, on it, and they didn't want to put me on.
Oh, what a surprise.
Yeah, well, on CBC last night, the Fifth Estate had their season premiere, and it was the a biography of Dick Cheney.
I know, I saw it. We talked about it in the first hour of the program.
Oh, it was great. I was going to suggest if... anybody wants to go to www.cbc.ca. They have more information about Dick Cheney.
Yeah,
and somewhere
actually,
there's a link, and you can order it.
It's really, if you go to cbc.ca/fifth, F-I-F-T-H, it'll take you right to the Fifth Estate, that program. The Fifth Estate is like 60 minutes.
Except it's more informed. And
right.
I know that you can order some of the past tapes, and there was one, the season premiere last fall, was actually on the connections between the Bush and the Bin Laden family, like how little Georgie got his $1.whatever million from brother-in-law of Osama bin Laden to start his Ambusto Oil Company.
Right.
Oddly enough, that's the same brother-in-law of Osama bin Laden that helped the first 9/11 terrorist get his feet on U.S. soil, get into flight training school.
What a surprise.
Gee, what a surprise.
And,
yeah,
and
you
probably
wanna...
got flown out the day after 9/11, you know.
And if people want to go there and look back through some of the titles and order them, I think it's like $29.99 Canadian, but believe me, it's worth it.
Yeah, $29.99 Canadian would be about, what, $18 U.S. right now? I mean,
And I don't know what shipping and handling, if they'll mail them to the U.S., but I have an address in Canada, people. Could you?
Well, I'm sure that they'll send them to the United States. I mean, I'd be amazed if the CBC wouldn't send them to the United
States. I've gotten some correspondence from them. I've never had a problem, but I've never... had to order, a cassette or anything like that.
It was a startling program, though, to see on a serious investigative reporting news program, right in the very beginning of this thing, basically, unfortunately, I don't have a transcript of it to read this guy's actual words, but the reporter said something to the effect of, Dick Cheney
has repeatedly throughout his career lied, manipulated, and something else, and always to either achieve political power or wealth for himself.
September 9th, 2000, when they said they had those satellite photographs of all those Iraqi troops at the border with Saudi Arabia.
That was 1991.
Anyway, they showed the same day the Soviet Union satellites pictures of the same area, and there's nothing.
Yeah, and Dick Cheney took those pictures. Yeah, that's what we opened the program with. Dick Cheney took those pictures over to Saudi Arabia, and that's how he convinced them to let us put U.S. soldiers on Saudi soil, which, of course, is what led to Osama bin Laden declaring war against us. So, anyhow, the entire 9/11 thing turns out, according to this documentary from CBC, and they don't draw this conclusion, but you watch this thing and it's hard not to. May be the consequence of Dick Cheney having doctored photos and lied to the Saudis in order to, as Secretary of Defense back when he was Secretary of Defense in the first Reagan administration in the early 90s, in order to get our troops on Saudi soil, and as part of this whole neocon philosophy of let's sew up the Middle East for us.
What do you think about him selling Halliburton selling parts?
Oh, I mean they
oil wells.
They indicted him as a criminal, Deidre. I mean they just laid it out. Deidre, I've got to move along though. I'm sorry we're at the end of the segment. But I appreciate the call, and thanks for pointing this out to folks. 1-866-889-8894, 29 minutes past the hour. For more than 27 years, the progressive magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. Author and broadcast personality Studs Terkel calls In These Times his bi-weekly tonic. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. 1-800-827-0270.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
Senator John Kerry has expressed that if elected, he would roll back President George W. Bush's tax cut for the wealthy. The administration has criticized the move, saying it would be detrimental to small businesses. Vice President Dick Cheney commented on the issue during Tuesday's vice presidential debate.
A great many of our small businesses pay taxes under the personal income taxes rather than the corporate rate. And about 900,000 small businesses will be hit if you do, in fact, do what they want to do with the top bracket.
According to the Nonpartisan Tax Policy Center, Kerry plans to roll back tax cuts for those making more than $200,000, but at the same time would create new tax cuts specifically aimed at small businesses. The center calculates that less than 450,000 small businesses would be affected by the overall rollback, 400,000 less than the number quoted by Cheney. The LA Times recently gave an example of one individual who benefits from the Bush tax cut. Lynn Cheney, wife of the vice president, as the owner of a consulting firm where she is the sole employee, declared herself a small business last year and received a tax break of nearly $50,000.
Hotel managers say their lockout of striking San Francisco workers will last indefinitely. Over 1,400 workers at four downtown hotels are on strike. In response, the San Francisco Hotel Multi-Employer Group locked out 2,600 non-striking workers at 10 other hotels. Unite Here Local 2 president Mike Casey.
They're playing hardball because they're global corporations and they're used to getting their way, and they aren't used to having to sit down as equals across the bargaining table from people.
Casey said workers are trying to protect health and pension benefits, cut workloads, and get more pay.
Locating the owner of a glass slipper is not the most pressing matter in the Magic Kingdom these days. At the grand opening of a new World of Disney store in New York City, more than 60 members of the Services Trade Council Union that represents workers ranging from ticket takers to costume characters at Disney parks and hotels in Florida handed out leaflets complaining of drawn-out negotiations with park officials. Negotiations have been going on for more than 6 months. The employees are concerned because the proposed contract eliminates some overtime benefits, increases health care costs, and eliminates a pension plan for new hires. Disney World spokeswoman Jackie Polak complained of the protests in New York, saying time would have been better spent at the negotiation table than protesting in a different state. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. All the attention given to Halliburton and their no-bid contract in Iraq would make you think that it is not a regular practice. But a new report from the Center of Public Integrity reveals that at least $362 billion was spent on no-bid contracts by the Pentagon since 1998. But the Pentagon did not stop there, rewarding $255 billion in cost-plus contracts that allow companies to spend as much as they deem necessary on a job, including an agreed-upon profit.
You've been listening to WIND, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit Labor Radio.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
The billionaires don't want you to vote. If you're happy with George Bush in charge, if you want to keep us living large, do you really want to rock the boat? Hey, the billionaires don't want you to vote.
The billionaires for Bush. They don't want you voting. Definitely 27 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. And welcome back to our program. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. An Anglo-Saxon coin was just auctioned for $409,000. Why is that of consequence? I have to share this with you. Let me do it right after I take this call. This is a fascinating story about that goes right back to the roots of American history. But first, let's talk to Rick in Santa Fe. 1-866-889-8894. Richard in Santa Fe. Hey, Richard, welcome to the program.
Hi, Tom. Can you hear me okay?
I can hear you just fine.
Great. I sometimes jump back and forth between your show and Rush just to hear what they're talking about. And Roger Hitchcock's on today, subbing for Rush, and he's questioning our patriotism again, talking about Afghanistan and asking us to, if we're for democracy in Afghanistan, then we vote for Bush, and if we're against democracy, we'd vote for Clinton. What do you think of that?
Well, you mean for Kerry.
You said Clinton.
Yeah, it's a nonsense argument. I mean, as most of them are. I mean, it's the old strategy of, if you don't like what they have to say, you don't like their positions, assassinate the person. It's, call people names, question their democracy, or question their patriotism. It was the strategy. It's a strategy that in the 20th century was really, really, really well played out by Adolf Hitler. This whole strategy of questioning the patriotism of anybody who dissents, and it's wrong. It's absolutely wrong. It's not how it should be. Victoria Jones of the Talk Radio News Service is on the line. Hey, Victoria, where are you today?
I'm in Washington, D.C. today, but actually I'm outside, so if you hear background noise, it's because it's, real background, not taped in.
There, like on The Daily Show?
It's, right.
Yeah, okay, so what's happening?
Well, a lot of reaction today to the report, the WMD report that came out yesterday afternoon. And a lot of spinning. People trying to figure out which way to jump and how to try and make the results look good for their side, which seems to be considerably more difficult for those Republicans who have chosen to stick with the vice president's view and the president's view of things.
Yeah, Ted Stevens had a virtual meltdown on the floor of the Senate yesterday. I played a clip of that on the program in the last hour. He disintegrated.
Quite extraordinary.
Yeah.
Really.
Yeah.
I mean, just really very bizarre. Very bizarre. The sense that we just hear a different reason going to war all the time. And I was listening to some of the representatives on the House floor this morning, both sides getting up one after the other for their minute or however long it was,
yeah,
to say this is why we went to war, or that's not why we went to war. And it was kind of as though, I think most of the American people get that we didn't have the correct information. I think the question for many now is, was it deliberate or not? And whether it was or not, is that going to influence how they vote? And I think that this is really what the two sides are most interested in, because underneath anxiety about the economy, the sense of who is going to keep me safe seems to be what the internal polls are indicating to the candidates that the most important issue that people are voting on.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting, Victoria. I live in a state that borders Canada, and we just had a call from a caller, Deidre, in Michigan, another state that borders Canada, and most of the states that border Canada can get Canadian television. And last night on CBC, Canadian Broadcasting Corporation, nationwide, the entire country of Canada was exposed to the 30th anniversary show of a program called The Fifth Estate, which is the CBC's equivalent of 60 Minutes, investigative journalism. And it was an hour-long expose of Dick Cheney and the lies that he has been telling all these years, and in particular, the lies that led up to this war. And they came right out and said, you know, the war was fought. It had nothing to do with weapons of mass destruction. It had to do with this neoconservative Straussian philosophy of if we go in and impose democracy in those parts of the world, they will immediately, grab it and run with it. And that will be a great thing. And it would be a great thing if it were true, you know. But it's a fantasy. That would then make the Middle East safer for U.S. oil interests, and we wouldn't have to, you know, have smaller cars, or we wouldn't have to turn down on thermostats. We could continue to be 4% of the world's population and consume 25% of the planet's energy. And
that's fascinating. That would never get aired. Well, it might get aired on PBS, but not that many people watch.
Yeah. It was an absolute indictment. And then they had this Canadian guy who had been trading with Iran via Halliburton, when Dick Cheney was CEO of Halliburton, and they lured him, the U.S. government lured him down to Florida for a meeting, what he thought was a meeting with a customer. It was a setup to get him out of Canada so that he could be arrested. He spent 4 years in a U.S. prison for trading with Iran, and all he was doing was representing Dick Cheney in Iran. Representing Halliburton, selling Halliburton products.
Why didn't that come out?
Well, it did come out in Canada.
Yeah. But only people in states like yours can get it, unfortunately.
I know. It's just incredible. Well, if you go to cbc.ca/fifth, F-I-F-T-H, you can see a good chunk of the report. Anyhow, you didn't call for me to rant at you. You called to share our daily report from Washington. Yeah.
Well, that is probably the main part of it. Obviously, gearing up. Also, people are starting to position themselves and get into pre-pundit positionary for the debate tomorrow night. The sense that with the vice presidential candidates having been fairly testy, it set the stage for the presidential candidates to be more testy than they were, and the different format also being more intimate. Anybody who turns to somebody else and says something fairly fierce has much more intensity than if you're 12 feet away at a podium. That looks like it's going to be really very, very interesting indeed.
Are the Republicans playing the low expectation game again? Are they saying, don't worry, he's going to mangle things, he's going to screw up?
They now love the fact that he screwed up. And because, John Edwards, master debater, and John Kerry, master debater, and we're hearing a great deal of that. And I think they're trying to say that John Kerry loves this format, which, of course, is not the case at all. He doesn't, really. He's not that comfortable in it. President Bush isn't particularly comfortable in it. So neither one is crazy about this format.
Yeah.
We are pretty sure that Bush is going to be far better prepared this time.
Yes.
He's very well aware of what he looked like.
Yeah. And the last politician who really did well in this format was Bill Clinton. In fact, it was in this format that Bill Clinton ate George H.W. Bush's lunch.
Exactly, and that's partly why the rules have been changed, to stop anything like President Clinton getting up and going over to the woman who asked the question. That prompted him to say, do you know someone who's lost their job, and to really make that connection. They don't want that to happen, and it won't. And once again, the two candidates are not supposed to address each other, but of course they can do by looking at each other and not actually asking questions, just making statements.
Yeah. Well, it's going to be fascinating. Victoria, thanks for the report.
Thank you very much.
Great to hear from you there in Washington, D.C. Always appreciate hearing from Victoria Jones of the Talk Radio News Service, the bottom of the second hour of the program every day, our annual update of what's going on in Washington, D.C. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Billy in Santa Cruz, California on the line. Hey, Billy, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Tom. Tom, I want to talk about the media, but first I want to make a simple declarative sentence.
Okay. If you're competent to do that, you're not related to George Bush.
I'm not confident, but I'm confident.
Okay. There you go.
Tom DeLay is a turd.
He's
making America a lie.
Okay. I'm pretty sure that that's a word you can say on the radio, but I'm not sure I'd want to repeat it.
Well, I wouldn't want you to repeat it. I think you're a gentleman.
Yeah, well...
I'm a truth teller and not a gentleman, and therefore... You know, while I always will find words that won't get us, fined, the sentiment is not strong enough for what Tom DeLay has done to this country's
democracy. Well, he's just been, you know, just yesterday, for the third time now, the House of Representatives has censured him, has called him somebody not worthy of being a member of the United States Congress.
That means turd.
Well, you know, or whatever, yeah.
Yeah. So the fact is... that they are willing to censure the guy, but continue to be led by him and his criminal ways. And let me be clear about that. Tom DeLay, you're a criminal. You guys pass out money on the floor of the House. You've turned just the House into a bunch of whores.
And this is what's so ironic, Billy, is that the censure vote by the committee that voted to censure DeLay was 100%. It was 5 Democrats, 5 Republicans, as I recall, and all of them voted to censure him. And yet, as you say, nobody's going to take him out of power because he's the guy who controls the money. He's the guy who can...
Exactly. They vote to censure him because censure means nothing among these people of such low moral quality.
Right. It's a hand slap.
Talk about why they can get away with what they get away with. I am haunted. Every night I have the same dream, and in that dream I see Helen Thomas being sent to the back of the room, and I see the press corps get up, turn their backs... But no, they don't. I would like to suggest a show. Could you get a member of the White House press corps in for an interview and either let me question them or maybe just get one of these CBC guys from the Fifth Estate to ask why they haven't...
You know, I've had this conversation with a member of the White House press corps, which was... I'm drawing a blank on his name right now, but because it was about a year and a half ago. But it was one of the two guys who are always, you know, like outing corporate misbehavior and things. I mean, there are a few people in the who have White House press corps credentials who are not employees of major multinational corporations that masquerade as news organizations. And he said, you know, very clearly, here's how the game works. He said there's the small guys, which is probably 80% of the folks who are actually showing up in the White House press corps. And they rarely, if ever, get called on when the president's there. They never get called on when the president's there. They rarely get called on even for the regular press conferences. But occasionally, Scotty will throw them a bone. But basically, then you've got these guys, men and women from the big networks and the large news organizations, who are drawing, you know, $200,000, $300,000, $400,000, $500,000 a year salaries. And their ability to do their job, hang on just a second, Billy, their ability to do their job requires that they get called on. And so the White House has reached a position, and Clinton understood this, by the way, but Clinton didn't use this the way that Bush is using it. Bush is the first president to use this, in as far as I know, in modern history. The president and the press officer in the White House have the power to destroy the career of anybody in major network news simply by not answering their questions. Well,
No.
That's what's happening right now.
Tom, let me have my turn here.
Sure.
Here's the real truth. You only have the power you cede to people by being the biggest chicken on earth. You know, there's only 3 major networks. You know? If those people got together and decide as a group, you know, you either treat us all correctly, you call on whomever raises their hand, not who you picked. If you don't let Helen Thomas back onto the front row, none of us will ask questions, and nobody else.
I absolutely agree with you, Billy, but
we won't print your message of the day.
I agree with you. However, it's not going to happen as long as these news organizations. I mean, this has all happened largely since the 80s when the Reagan administration stopped enforcing FCC rules that said that news, that you have to, that broadcast organizations have to provide community service, and that news is considered community service. And so they all said, okay, news is now part of entertainment. It's got to make a profit. And so now the bottom line rules news.
The democracy is gone. That's it.
It is moving out unless...
You know, it's not like we have good people in politics. When you have bad people in politics, then you need stand-up people in the media. Without that, America is the lie that people believe it's becoming.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with you. And that's why I'm doing this radio program, Billy. And I know that's why you're calling in, and I appreciate it. And we have to continue beating on this drum that it is time to reform. At the core of this really is corporate power, and it's not the power of small corporations. I am all in favor of small and medium-sized corporations. They very rarely abuse the rules or screw up the game. But there's this handful of corporations, probably fewer than 1,000, and most of them are multinational, maybe 3/4 of them, that are claiming personhood rights, are claiming rights under the Constitution of the human rights, the rights of privacy, the rights of free speech, the right to protection against discrimination, so that Walmart can come into your community whether you want it or not, and on and on and on it goes. And they have taken over the news business to a large extent. They've taken over broadcast media. And it's, in my opinion, frankly, harming democracy. And we, the people in the past, have stood up to that power. That was the core of Franklin Roosevelt's presidency. It was in many ways the core of Abraham Lincoln's presidency. And it hasn't happened in large part since Jimmy Carter broke up AT&T, the last president to enforce the Sherman Antitrust Act. And it's time to, and when Reagan came in and he said, oh, we're not going to enforce that. And all of a sudden you had this mergers and acquisition frenzy. Where, you know, the big fish started eating other fish until there was nothing left but big fish in so many markets. And, you know, monopolies. Jared in Grand Rapids on the line. Hey, Jared, what's up?
Hey, Tom, how are we doing today?
Good.
Good. I just wanted to start off saying thank you for giving us upfront information and good, true information. I do appreciate it, and I'm sorry I missed you in Grand Rapids. A while back, you made a statement that finally hit home to me. You said that... The Republican Party, and I'm sorry to swing the attention now on something different, that the Republican Party proclaims Christianity as their own. I never used to believe that until recently. A Christian myself, I've actually had my own fellow Christian brothers and sisters tell me, straight up, in church, wherever, that no true Christian could ever vote for John Kerry. No true Christian would know exactly who to vote for in this election. And to speak to them, you would think that I was trying to speak certain theologic things into their minds about Christ or something.
Yeah, it's a tragedy, isn't it, Jared? I mean, Christ who said, "Render unto Caesar what is Caesar's."
Exactly. They don't. These people are just they're baffled by one aspect, voting. You know, they hear the word not for abortion, and they automatically feel that, you know, maybe because Kerry takes a different stance as democracy would, let the people decide.
Yeah.
They don't seem to get it.
Yeah, no, they clearly don't, and it's a real shame. It's a crime against democracy, in my opinion. Jared, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Good to hear from you. And, you know, and it reflects the schism in America. Welcome to an America ruled by a divider, not a uniter. 10 minutes before the hour, Tom Hartman with you.
Do you want to find out what the invasion of Iraq was really about? Read the new illustrated book, We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. Once you've read We the People, you'll understand why conservatives are trying to bankrupt government and how perpetual war is used as a political strategy in the United States. You'll learn how our votes are in danger and what we must do about it. You'll discover why the Alien and Sedition Acts of 1798 matter today. Populist watchdog and national radio commentator Jim Hightower had this to say about We the People.
Not only does this book tell you what's really going on, but it even draws you a picture of it. Read, learn, and act.
We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. A compelling story of how a government by and for the people has been replaced by corporate domination. Fully illustrated by Neil Cohn, We the People issues a call to action in a most entertaining way. Available in bookstores everywhere.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive Magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555 and mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman Program. That's the Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
Who is it?
Special delivery.
Who?
Pizza man.
Hey, you're not the pizza man. You're the cable guy again.
Price patrol.
No, you're not. I can see your van. You're the cable company. I'm not going to let you raise my rates again. I'm calling American Satellite to get a DirecTV system.
Presidential candidate.
Are you going to offer me over 125 digital quality channels for as little as $39.99 a month, including my local channels?
Ice cream man.
Yeah, like that's going to work. If I call American Satellite right now, I can get a 4-room DirecTV system, including professional installation free. Can you beat that?
Pizza man.
You already tried that. Well, that's it. I'm calling to get my DirecTV system.
Call 800-505-1546. That's 800-505-1546. For new customers only, annual programming commitment required. Ask how you can get your first 6 months for only $29.99 a month, a $60 value. Offer ends July 17th. Call now, 800-505-1546.
This is the Workers' Independent News Service feature story. I'm Sarah Turner. A minimum wage referendum placed on the ballot in Florida could change the outcome of the November 2nd presidential election. The measure asks voters to support a $1 increase in the minimum wage from $5.15 to $6.15 an hour this year and annual increases connected to inflation.
$5.15 an hour, which is not even $11,000 a year if you're working full time, is really just a miserly sum, and it's not enough money really to live off of at all.
Elise Gowdy Wright, director of South Florida Jobs with Justice, organized a coalition of civil rights groups, religious congregations, and labor unions to collect nearly 1 million signatures over a 10-month period.
Just the sheer volume of signatures that are required to even put this to the voters as a question. It was a huge, huge hurdle. And we also have some political hurdles here. We thought we were going to be up against another amendment and some other lawmaking that was going on in our state capitol to try and prevent citizens from putting ballot initiatives that deal with the state constitution to voters.
George W. Bush opposes raising the minimum wage from its 1997 level, while John Kerry supports an increase.
I think for a lot of folks that are behind this effort, the hope is that because this is such a popular issue and there's so many people who are supportive of it, that it will help with voter turnout.
Gowdy Wright believes increasing the minimum wage will have a positive ripple effect for many Florida workers.
Those folks who make minimum wage will be directly impacted, but those folks who might make slightly higher than minimum wage, many of those employers will feel inclined to raise their wages as well.
The restaurant industry and the Florida Chamber of Commerce are opposing the ballot initiative. With the Workers' Independent News Service, I'm Sarah.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
What kind of fool do you take me for? You stole my heart and now you're back for more. Ain't no way you're coming through that door.
And that's our song to you, George. Welcome back. 5 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number, Brian in Michigan's on the line. Hey, Brian, what's up?
Hey, Tom, how are you?
Great. What's up?
I was watching the news again this morning, and I'm convinced that Bush is a terrorist. He's continuously pumping out into the media all these, what I consider to be bogus threat alerts.
Well, if a terrorist is one who terrorizes, then I think that you could, or, you know, threatens violence. And although, you know, he's threatening it by proxy, I suppose, by via other people.
Right. Well, it's instilling fear in a suppression, and it's trying to spin it to work in his favor.
I think it's very dangerous. I think to actually and kind of demagogic actually to say Bush is a terrorist. I think at a psychological level, you know, I agree with you that Bush is spreading terror, but we've got to be careful with this kind of language.
Understood.
I mean, I'm not saying this like, you know, John Ashcroft is going to get us. I'm saying this like, you know, let's be realistic and maintain, you know, credibility in the eyes and ears of even our conservative listeners. It is wrong. I think your point is that it is wrong to use the dangers that we are facing in the world as a political weapon to beat up on your opponent. It is wrong to say that your opponent doesn't care as much about the country, wouldn't protect the country as well as you would. I mean, it's just wrong to say that.
But, Tom, at the same time, it's also a manipulation of the public.
Yeah,
He's trying to, again, suppress us and keep us in fear and use it as a tool against the Democratic Party. So, yeah, it's a pretty sick and wrong philosophy.
Yeah.
There's no doubt about it.
And I think Americans are starting to see through it, Brian. I really think that they are. I think that, you know, by and large, American people are increasingly looking at this situation and saying, you know, especially Dick Cheney's, you know, this horrific Dr. Strangelove, Darth Vader performance a couple nights ago. Fear, you know. Well, it's just like Bush's closing statement the closing statement's really clarified it all. You know, Kerry was talking about the future and what we can do, and Bush was talking about fear. Better be afraid. You know, it's a danger. So,
precisely. Thank you.
Sure enough. Thanks for calling, Brian. Good to hear from you. So, you know, that's the bottom line, I think, you know.
This is a massive stockpile of biological weapons.
Really?
And is capable of killing millions.
And you're sure of this?
We know that the regime has produced thousands of tons of chemical agents.
Thousands of tons?
Including mustard gas, sarin nerve gas, VX nerve gas.
This is, of course, beyond the time when Donnie Rumsfeld was selling it to them, and Bush, apparently. Oh, my. Time for a change in America, my friends. Don't get afraid. Get active. Get out there. Get active. Get involved. That's what it's going to take.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
It's time for This Billionaire Moment.
Give a small child a knife, and the poor tyke is likely to chop off a finger. But in the hands of a master chef, that knife is a tool for creating a sumptuous feast. It's the same thing with money. Give money to poor people, and they'll probably squander it on foolish indulgences like aluminum siding or medicine or food. But if you put money in our hands, in the hands of people who have been around money all our lives, we're going to build empires and buy elections and develop weapon systems and suppress dissent and spread the blessing that is the essence of what America is all about. Unbridled corporate freedom all over the world. I'm Zena Fogue for This Billionaire Moment.
This Billionaire Moment is brought to you by BillionairesForBush.com.
Here come the billionaire!
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
Senator John Kerry has expressed that if elected, he would roll back President George W. Bush's tax cut for the wealthy. The administration has criticized the move, saying it would be detrimental to small businesses. Vice President Dick Cheney commented on the issue during Tuesday's vice presidential debate.
A great many of our small businesses pay taxes under the personal income taxes rather than the corporate rate. And about 900,000 small businesses will be hit if you do, in fact, do what they want to do with the top bracket.
According to the Nonpartisan Tax Policy Center, Kerry plans to roll back tax cuts for those making more than $200,000, but at the same time would create new tax cuts specifically aimed at small businesses. The center calculates that less than 450,000 small businesses would be affected by the overall rollback, 400,000 less than the number quoted by Cheney. The LA Times recently gave the example of one individual who benefits from the Bush tax cut. Lynn Cheney, wife of the vice president, as the owner of a consulting firm where she is the sole employee, declared herself a small business last year and received a tax break of nearly $50,000.
Hotel managers say their lockout of striking San Francisco workers will last indefinitely. Over 1,400 workers at four downtown hotels are on strike. In response, the San Francisco Hotel Multi-Employer Group locked out 2,600 non-striking workers at 10 other hotels. Unite Here Local 2 president Mike Casey.
They're playing hardball because they're global corporations and they're used to getting their way, and they aren't used to having to sit down as equals across the bargaining table from people.
Casey said workers are trying to protect health and pension benefits, cut workloads, and get more pay.
Locating the owner of a glass slipper is not the most pressing matter in the Magic Kingdom these days. At the grand opening of a new World of Disney store in New York City, more than 60 members of the Services Trade Council Union that represents workers ranging from ticket takers to costume characters at Disney parks and hotels in Florida handed out leaflets complaining of drawn-out negotiations with park officials. Negotiations have been going on for more than 6 months. The employees are concerned because the proposed contract eliminates some overtime benefits, increases health care costs, and eliminates a pension plan for new hires. Disney World spokeswoman Jackie Polak complained of the protests in New York, saying time would have been better spent at the negotiation table than protesting in a different state. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. All of the attention given to Halliburton and their no-bid contract in Iraq would make you think that it is not a regular practice. But a new report from the Center of Public Integrity reveals that at least $362 billion was spent on no-bid contracts by the Pentagon since 1998. But the Pentagon did not stop there, rewarding $255 billion in cost-plus contracts that allow companies to spend as much as they deem necessary on a job, including an agreed-upon profit.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
So, Jasper, how was your year?
Excellent. This administration gives the best returns ever.
Do tell.
Well, the money I paid to a lobbying firm in Washington brought in over $50 million in overseas contracts.
Oh, yes, lobbying pays.
Are you still into commodities, Max?
No, I'm funding politicians. My campaign contributions got me over $100 million worth of regulation waivers.
Well done, Max.
Today's wisest investments are in politics. Where are you throwing your money?
Easily paid for by billionairesforbush.com.
The Hummer. It's not just for driving anymore. Indeed, you can now splash the essence of Hummer all over your body. General Motors, the maker of this massive symbol of automotive macho, has now licensed a new Hummer cologne, calling it the Essence of Adventure, and pricing it as high as $52 for a Hummer-shaped bottle of the stuff. The scent is advertised as being masculine with rugged and adventurous attributes. They go further, promising that this new fragrance embodies all that Hummer is. The Hummer is an absurdly expensive, gas-guzzling, low-performance, high-polluting, gussied-up chunk of automotive junk. What would that smell like? Besides, these days, I see many more women driving these behemoths than men. Forget the masculinity pitch. This thing is turned into a girly car. I suggest they'd do better with a perfume than a cologne, preferably one with the alluring scent of money. If it's a real man's car you're after, you want the International CXT pickup truck. Weighing 14,500 pounds, reaching 9 feet tall and stretching 21 and a half feet long, you could put a Hummer in the pickup bed of this honker. In fact, this beast will tow 20 tons and has to have air brakes to make it stop. Yet, it's got the luxuries you need, too. Leather seats, wood grain trim, a drop-down DVD player, and whatnot. Speaking of luxury, it gets only 7 miles per gallon, requiring about $130 each time you fill up its 70-gallon diesel tank. Then there's the price tag. Up to $115,000 with all the options. That's pricey, but hey, it's a man's car. As CXT's marketing director says, this is not a soccer mom's vehicle. I can't see the wife picking up groceries with it. This is Jim Hightower saying, in a CXT, you can look down on a Hummer and say, mine's bigger than yours.
Larry King here with a question. You take vitamin E, but are you losing some of it before your body can use it? Well, now there's the advanced protection of Ester E, new from the makers of Ester C. Ester E's breakthrough form protects its antioxidant strength until your body's ready to use it. So, don't lose your E. Do what I do. Take new Ester E. Are you getting advanced protection from your vitamin E?
And now, look for new Ester E where fine vitamins are sold.
What if I told you that you could get cash back from your federal student loans? No, really. You can receive up to $1,000 cash rebate just for making your first six payments on time. Introducing College Loan Corporation's Reward. Now you can save up to 50% on your monthly payments, lock in the lowest interest rates in history, and you may be able to earn a significant rebate. That's cold hard cash in your pocket. To take advantage of this amazing offer, call 1-800-2-COLLEGE. That's 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can...
He's the man who uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live coast to coast, border to border, and streaming all about the planet, all about the planet, on the radiopower.org and cable radio network. About said in salutes to the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation, which last night, nationwide in Canada, played a in their investigative news reporting program, The Fifth Estate. Played an investigative report into the history of Dick Cheney. Who is this guy? Where'd he come from? What's he up to? What's he been doing? And basically, the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation indicted Dick Cheney for high crimes and misdemeanors. And every person in Canada, I can't say every person in Canada saw it, but every person in Canada had access to it. CBC, the major network in Canada. If you want to see the special, you can go to www.cbc, as in Canadian Broadcasting Corporation, cbc.ca, as in Canada, cbc.ca/fifth, F-I-F-T-H, cbc.ca/fifth, and that will take you to the website for the Fifth Estate. The 60-minute style news program that did their 30th anniversary broadcast last night, kicking off a new season with an hour-long, in-depth expose of the crimes of Dick Cheney, going back 30 years. My mouth fell open several times as I was watching this thing. I was just, how can they say this unless it's true? And if it's true, what does that mean for American democracy? This is truly scary. Anyhow, I commend it to you. I recommend it to you. They're going to be rebroadcasting by tapes of it. A year ago, their lead program had been about the connections between the Bush and Bin Laden families, which has now been largely redone by Michael Moore as the movie Fahrenheit 9/11, which is now out in DVD. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number, if you'd like to participate in the program today. Or you can drop into the chat room, which is full of some of the finest, most intelligent, most thoughtful, most insightful, most funny, most articulate people on the whole World Wide Web. Just go to TomHartman.com and click on Live Chat. It'll take you to the Democratic Forum on CompuServe. Plug in a CompuServe or AOL screen name and password, and boom, you're in. If you don't have one, you can get one for free. You don't need to put in a credit card or anything. There's no fee. You do have to use a real email address because they'll send you the password that way. And that's so that, if somebody goes in and tries to spam, posting commercial announcements and things, that they can be bounced out. But, We welcome dissenting voices, in fact, in the chat room. So, feel free to drop by. TomHartman.com, click on Live Chat. And if you go to TomHartman.com and click on Message Boards and go to the message board about the elections, you will see the Michigan ballot, the Michigan absentee ballot And I kid you not, this has been fairly solidly confirmed now by a couple of sources. This is an actual scan of the Michigan absentee ballot that shows that if you fill in the arrow that points to John Kerry, you are, in fact, voting for George W. Bush. It is misaligned. The exact same way, or a very similar way, that the touchscreen machines in Florida and in Texas were misaligned in the 2000 and 2002 elections, where in both cases, when people voted for the Democrat, particularly in the state, in the Jeb Bush's when he was running for governor, they would vote for his Democratic opponent, they would push the button, and the machine would say, thank you for voting for Jeb Bush, or, you know, however it says that. And this got, you know, this was reported in the news, and the voting machine company said, oh, there was a misaligned touchscreen. There's like, you know, this kind of electronic grid for the touchscreen, so it knows where your finger is pressing, and it wasn't lined up with the buttons. Oddly enough, the way it was lined up was if you push the button for Jeb Bush, it recorded for Jeb Bush, and if you push the button for his opponent, it voted for Jeb Bush. And over there in the corner where there wasn't anything, if you push that button, well, it wasn't a button there, but if you push that space, then you would have voted for Jeb Bush's opponent. And, of course, it wasn't in every state, it wasn't even in every machine, but there were enough of them that quite a few complaints were registered. A small problem. You can see it in print right there on our message board, and a discussion about it. And Vaudrey, one of our listeners and an old colleague or associate, I'm not quite sure what to call of mine, friend of mine, in the ADD arena, a very knowledgeable person about neurobiology. Vaudrey pointing out that Al Jazeera now is openly speculating about whether the elections on November 2nd in the United States are going to be suspended. You know, and that this is some kind of plan on the part of the Bush administration. I mean, it's like the world has turned into conspiracy freaks. Why? Because we've been behaving so weird. We came up with these strange notion that, for example,
Iraq possesses ballistic missiles with a likely range of hundreds of miles.
Hundreds of miles.
Far enough to strike Saudi Arabia, Israel, Turkey, and other nations.
But they were
in a region where more than 135,000 American civilians and service members live and work.
But you will recall they were destroying them.
We've also discovered through intelligence that Iraq has a growing fleet of manned and unmanned aerial vehicles.
They had a balsa wood airplane.
Could be used to disperse chemical or biological weapons across broad areas. We're concerned that Iraq is exploring ways of using these UAVs for missions targeting the United States.
They're coming to get us. And increasingly the world is saying, really the better analogy, and I wish I had the sound clip here, is the old 60s song of they're coming to take me away, ha-ha, they're coming to take me away, ho-ho-hee, ha-ha, to the funny farm. You know, Iraq is not coming to get you. Sorry, Georgie. Iraq is not your problem.
Oh, he could have a nuclear weapon in less than a year.
He could have a nuclear weapon in less than a year.
We've experienced the horror of September the 11th.
Oh, and Iraq has something to do with
that. We've seen that those who hate America are willing to crash airplanes into buildings full of innocent people.
And because they hate our foreign policy. I mean, let's just be honest with the American people about this. Bin Laden didn't wake up in a cave one day and say, you know, with a copy of the Bill of Rights and go, holy cow, look at this. The government shall pass no law establishing a religion. We can't have that. We've got to attack these people. Give me a break. Does Bush really believe that Americans are so stupid that they will believe that we were attacked because they hate our freedoms? They hate our values? We were attacked because of our foreign policy. And Bin Laden was right up front about it. He said it in 1998 when he said, he said that he was going to attack us if we didn't pull our troops out of Saudi Arabia and stop propping up a dictatorship that he considered corrupt, the Saudi royal family. That was basically just you know, their whole reason for existence was to feed oil, cheap oil, to the United States. You keep in mind, when Bush came into office, oil was down to $17 a barrel. And these folks consider this pretty intolerable. Anyhow, 1-866-889-8894. Let's take a few calls here. Nancy in New Mexico is on the line. Hey, Nancy, welcome to the program.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
I am great, but I'll get better. How about you?
I'm well. I just had a comment. I was listening to the last one of the callers in the last hour about the Christian thing with Bush and the moral thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, I get these inane emails all the time about, isn't it wonderful we have a born-again believer in the White House and we have to pray for him. And I'm not doubting that he is a born-again believer. I think he is, and I will not question his spirituality or anybody's. But how do they say they'll vote for him because Kerry lies and he's more moral when here's a man in 2000 who was running against, in the primaries, John McCain, who's very formidable, who has a life of, you know, he was a hero, for God's sake, you know.
Mm.
And George Bush knew that he could not beat John McCain on his own merit. So he, George Bush, who uses Jesus Christ to promote himself on a regular basis, he turned away from every Christian principle, and he spread vicious lies about John McCain.
Yeah, they did push polling.
Now, how do people say that this is a more moral man? And how do we trust somebody like that who wants the throne of power so badly that he will do something like that?
Yeah, I have to say, Nancy, that was pretty horrific. Where they apparently Karl Rove was in charge of this, and they had what's called push polling. They had people calling up likely Republican primary voters in was it North Carolina or South Carolina?
I think it was South Carolina.
Yeah, South Carolina, where the primary, you know, where Bush and Cheney were neck and neck in the primary, saying, you know, Bush and McCain. And, of course, McCain and his wife have adopted a child from, I think she's from Laos or Cambodia. I could be wrong, but her skin is a little darker than McCain's, shall we say. And they were calling up people and they said, if you found out that John McCain had an affair with a black woman and had a love child by her, how would that affect your vote? And or if you found out that John McCain had been treated for mental illness as a result of being a prisoner of war, how would that affect your vote? If you found out that John McCain had been unfaithful to his wife with a black woman, how would that affect your vote? And of course, you know, they didn't say it was true, but by asking the question, it put it out there, and it's how Bush beat.
McCain says we should get over it. You know, he's over it. We should get over it. And I'm thinking, yeah, but 1,000 of our guys are dying in Iraq. How do we get over somebody who would stoop to that level or allow his party to stoop to that level?
Well, see, that's a small crime.
Another politician.
Yeah, Nancy, in my mind, that's a small crime. I mean, the large crimes that the Bush administration are committing are handing our commons over to corporate polluters, handing our government over to the highest bidder on every level, ripping apart protections for working people in the United States, trying to take us back to the McKinley era, taking us back to a time of neo-feudalism where basically it's riches rule and that's it. You know, the golden rule, he who has the gold rules, the little Republican joke there. And just tearing our nation apart, And these are the unspeakable, not to mention, you know, killing some 30 or 40,000 human beings over non-existent weapons to secure oil so that we can continue to offer $100,000 tax deductions to people who buy Hummers. I mean, it's over the top.
Exactly.
Those in my mind, it's the beginning. I mean, that's the beginning of the list of high crimes, the things that are harming. You know, you've got tens of millions of people in the United States who are underemployed. You've got 40-some-odd million, almost 50 million, 47 million people in the United States who have no health insurance. You've got health insurance, people who are insured. Their health insurance companies are constantly ripping them off, running them around in circles, you know, tearing their lives apart. These are the crimes of the Bush administration, in my opinion. Nancy, thanks for the call. Good to hear from you. I appreciate it. 20 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman radio program, helping you win the water cooler wars with uncommon sense from the radical middle.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Waitsfield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack and automatically automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
The following phone call was not recorded on February 30th, 2004.
Thank you for calling about DirecTV. My name is Lynn. How can I help you?
Thank you, sir. Thank goodness you're there. You've got to help me. My cable company is raising their rates again. I don't know what I'm going to do.
It's okay, ma'am. I'm here to help. I'm glad you called.
They're taking away our favorite channels and charging more. It's just wrong.
Ma'am, I get that all the time. Let me help you right away. Would you like to get over 125 channels of your favorite programming for only $39.99?
Will I still be able to get my local channels?
Absolutely. And because you called American Satellite right now, you can get up to a four-room DirecTV system for free and free professional installation for all new customers with an annual programming commitment.
Oh, thank you. My husband, Nick, is going to be so happy.
Call American Satellite at 1-800-505-1542. That's 800-505-1542. Call now and ask how you can get total choice for only $29.99 a month for the first 6 months. A $60 value. 800-505-1542. Add $4.99 a month per second in each additional receiver. Offer ends July 17, 2004. Call now.
For more than 27 years, the progressive magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice.
Offer value. 800-505-1542. Add $4.99 a month per second in each additional receiver. Offer ends July 17, 2004. Call now.
For more than 27 years, the progressive magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. Author and broadcast personality Studs Terkel calls In These Times his bi-weekly tonic. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. 1-800-827-0270.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report.
According to the latest State Department data, Iraq's crude oil revenues fell by an average of more than $24 million a day in the month of August, bringing the month's total losses to over $620 million. Almost daily attacks on pipelines and pumping stations have brought oil exports to their lowest level since October 2003.
Zinn and the Mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555 and mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman program. That's the Progressive. It's your antidote. Progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555 and mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman program. That's the Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
Well, video joints on every corner, 14 super discount stores, each one bigger than the last, with giant sales blowing out the doors. And I try to be so thrifty, but there's just no use pretending that I understand how I can save my money while I'm spending.
Welcome to the program.
Hi, Tom.
What's up?
Yeah, I wanted to, what I called in about first was about Saudi Arabia, but before I say what I was going to say, I wanted to comment a little bit on the Christian issue, because that's really been an issue for me, and in fact, maybe foremost. And I've recently written an article that I'm trying to get out there everywhere that says I'm no longer a Christian, because what that word has come to mean, and, you know, it's kind of like, you know, what they've done to the word Republican and conservative and everything else. So.
Yeah, they've been hijacked.
Yeah, so anyway, I'll probably be sending you that. And
you know, what I, Karen, what I would suggest is that we take our words back.
Well,
I mean, I say,
yeah, good point.
I will say publicly, I'm a Christian. I absolutely subscribe to the teachings of Jesus Christ. I, you know, however, Jerry Falwell would not want me in his church.
Yeah, well, that's kind of where I'm at. But, you know, the litmus test in the Bible is love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, self-control, gentleness, and, you know, it's real
very
clear.
The very simple litmus test is in Matthew 25, you know, where basically it's the only place in the Bible where the disciples come to Jesus and they say, how do I get into heaven? And he says, and he lays out the list. He says, here's, you know, have you fed the hungry? Have you, you know, given clothing to the naked? Have you visited those in prison? If you haven't, you're in trouble. You're toast.
Yeah, well, I'm just trying to challenge the real Christians or the people who really follow the teachings of Christ to stand up and counter this other stuff. But what I was calling about initially was that, I don't know if you're aware of it, but here on KTRC, actually during your program, in fact, there's an ad that's on the radio, and it says this ad is brought to you by the people of Saudi Arabia. And it says that they had nothing to do with 9/11 and that they didn't fly out of the country when Americans weren't allowed to fly. And it's this whole ad just, you know, really refuting everything that's in Fahrenheit 9/11.
That's fascinating.
Yeah, and, I mean, I'm listening to this and I'm thinking, aren't there some FCC regulations about countries, you know, making some sort of political statement on our
airwaves? No, there aren't. It's perfectly legal.
Really?
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
I mean, it just makes me think, are there going to be helicopters dropping leaflets soon? I mean,
it's sort of the electronic equivalent, isn't it? I mean, that's fascinating. I have to say, I tip my hat to the folks at KTRC for, you know, creative salesmanship. I think that's great. And I think that, you know, these are, and in a way, I would suggest to you, Karen, that that Saudi Arabia is shooting itself in the foot by keeping this issue alive.
Well, I mean, it made me wonder if it really was brought to you by the people of Saudi Arabia or if it was people of Saudi Arabia living in the United States who are working for the Republican Party since Fahrenheit 9/11 just came out on video.
Yeah.
And this is a way to fight back without their name being attached to it. I don't know.
It's probably all of the same. You know, all one and the same. I mean, just 2 days ago, three jailed Saudi democratic reform advocates, I'm quoting from the Associated Press here, refused to participate in their court hearing after a judge closed it to the public. The three defendants are the last remaining detainees among 13 reformers arrested in March for allegedly openly criticizing the kingdom's strict religious environment and slow pace of reform.
That sounds familiar.
Yeah, in Saudi Arabia, if you advocate democracy, you go to jail.
Wow.
I mean, you know, do not pass go. Again, quoting from the Associated Press, the Saudi royal family has absolute power, and Saudis cannot hold public gatherings to discuss political or social issues. Some Saudis agree that the kingdom's lack of democracy has made it a breeding ground for extremists. They have a real problem there, and we have a real problem there. Anyhow, Karen, thanks for calling and sharing that. Fascinating, fascinating bit of information. 29 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman Program, the pill that will help you escape the matrix.
Hi, I'm David Orrick. How do you tell if an air purifier is worth what you paid for it? Well, place a balloon over it. If the balloon flies up in the air, like it does with an Orrick air purifier, that's pure fresh air pushing it. But if it falls to the floor, there's virtually no air movement. Try my Orrick air purifier free for 90 days. Call 1-800-989-4200. 1-800-989-4200. Remember, if the balloon doesn't fly, I wouldn't buy.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
Senator John Kerry has expressed that if elected, he would roll back President George W. Bush's tax cut for the wealthy. The administration has criticized the move, saying it would be detrimental to small businesses. Vice President Dick Cheney commented on the issue during Tuesday's vice presidential debate.
A great many of our small businesses pay taxes under the personal income taxes rather than the corporate rate. And about 900,000 small businesses will be hit if you do, in fact, do what they want to do with the top bracket.
According to the Nonpartisan Tax Policy Center, Kerry plans to roll back tax cuts for those making more than $200,000, but at the same time would create new tax cuts specifically aimed at small businesses. The center calculates that less than 450,000 small businesses would be affected by the overall rollback, 400,000 less than the number quoted by Cheney. The LA Times recently gave an example of one individual who benefits from the Bush tax cut, Lynn Cheney, wife of the vice president, as the owner of a consulting firm where she is the sole employee, declared herself a small business last year and received a tax break of nearly $50,000.
Hotel managers say their lockout of striking San Francisco workers will last indefinitely. Over 1,400 workers at four downtown hotels are on strike. In response, the San Francisco Hotel Multi-Employer Group locked out 2,600 non-striking workers at 10 other hotels. Unite Here Local 2 President Mike Casey.
They're playing hardball because they're global corporations and they're used to getting their way, and they aren't used to having to sit down as equals across the bargaining table from people.
Casey said workers are trying to protect health and pension benefits, cut workloads, and get more pay.
Locating the owner of a glass slipper is not the most pressing matter in the Magic Kingdom these days. At the grand opening of a new World of Disney store in New York City, more than 60 members of the Services Trade Council Union that represents workers ranging from ticket takers to costume characters at Disney parks and hotels in Florida handed out leaflets complaining of drawn-out negotiations with park officials. Negotiations have been going on for more than 6 months. The employees are concerned because the proposed contract eliminates some overtime benefits, increases health care costs, and eliminates a pension plan for new hires. Disney World spokeswoman Jackie Polak complained of the protests in New York, saying time would have been better spent at the negotiation table than protesting in a different state. Negotiations have been going on for more than 6 months. The employees are concerned because the proposed contract eliminates some overtime benefits, increases health care costs, and eliminates a pension plan for new hires. Disney World spokeswoman Jackie Polak complained of the protests in New York, saying time would have been better spent at the negotiation table than protesting in a different state. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. All of the attention given to Halliburton and their no-bid contract in Iraq would make you think that it is not a regular practice. But a new report from the Center of Public Integrity reveals that at least $362 billion was spent on no-bid contracts by the Pentagon since 1998. But the Pentagon did not stop there, rewarding $255 billion in cost-plus contracts that allow companies to spend as much as they deem necessary on a job, including an agreed-upon profit.
You've been listening to WIND, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit Labor Radio.
Interesting, because yesterday, Americans Acting Together, ACT, published this really interesting paper called Bush Forcing Democracy in the Middle East, Except on His Saudi Pals. Raises some very significant questions that I think we all really need to be asking. How are the Saudis reacting, who are not a democracy? It's an autocratic kingdom. How are they reacting to all this talk by the Bush administration about we need to bring democracy to the Middle East? They either know that it's cynical. They either, you know, don't believe it. They believe that it's just a cynical ploy for us to extend our influence over the oil fields, for example. Or they're quaking in their boots. Which is it? My suspicion would be one, not two. But, you know, who knows? 1-866-889-8894. Actually, I'm pretty confident of it. I mean, the Bush family and the Saudi Roe family, they're like, you know, Bandar Bush. Daniel in rural Virginia on the line. Hey, Daniel, welcome to the program.
Hey, Tom, it's an honor to talk to you. I've been listening for the last year and a half. I just had a question about the debate the other night.
Uh-huh.
Cheney said that we've actually dropped, and he listed some huge number, of people from the tax rolls.
Yeah, several million people. I forget what the number was, too, but we've dropped several million people from the tax rolls. I was waiting for Edwards to then say, yes, they are unemployed, or yes, they have lost their $20 and $30 an hour jobs, and they're now working for $8 an hour out to Walmart, and they're making so little they don't have to pay taxes.
So those are the non-people that are they're not working, but they're not unemployed?
Well, who knows what Cheney meant? My guess is that he was trying to brag about the fact that part of this most recent tax reform thing had to do with raising the threshold, the amount of money that you had to make in order to start paying taxes. But I, you know, it didn't come across that way, and frankly, I don't think that those numbers jibe. And in fact, this last piece of tax legislation that they just passed, if you make less than $10,700 a year, you don't qualify for the child tax credit, this extra $400. We talked about this in the program a couple days ago. So it's you know, the hypocrisy and spin is just bizarre on the conservative side.
I looked at my wife and I said, those are the people that aren't unemployed anymore but still don't have jobs.
There you go. There you go. Yep. And that's about right. Daniel, thanks for calling. Great to hear from you. I'm sorry, there's just a terrible buzz on the line there, too, so I just, you know, drop you off. But thanks for calling. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. And Chris in New Mexico is on the line. Hey, Chris, welcome to the program.
Hey, Tom. Yeah, I just want to do another little follow-up. I've also heard this Saudi Arabian ad on NPR, Morning Edition. And it's really quite fascinating because I remember back in the first Gulf War, these jokers were taking out full-page ads in various newspapers saying, good friends, good allies.
That's right. I've seen
those. And that was exactly the tagline I heard this morning.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so, good friends, good allies.
Yeah. Well, for the oil companies, they are. And really, you know, if you accept the notion that America's vital interest is to have cheap oil, they are good friends and allies. If that's more important than democracy, if that's more important than there not being 9/11s, if that's more important than the fact that 15 out of the 19 hijackers were Saudi citizens, then they are good allies.
Yeah, and they flat deny that in their ad. They I mean, it's not even just a spin. I mean, they flat deny that they were involved in 9/11.
Well, I don't think the Saudi royal family was involved in 9/11.
Okay, fine. All right.
I mean, do you?
No. But, you know,
I don't think that, you know, I think in fact 9/11 was a part of an attempt by bin Laden to bring down the Saudi royal family. He hates the Saudi royal family. He wants to replace them with a theocracy.
Okay, you're right. I'll buy it.
Okay.
Thanks.
All right. Thanks a lot, Chris. Good to hear from you. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Saudi Arabia, this from this report by Americans Coming Together. Actually, this is a quote from Mallory Factor, the vice chair of the Independent Task Force on Terrorist Financing in the Council of Foreign Relations Senate Banking Committee hearings. Okay, this is the Senate Banking Committee hearings on September 29th of this month, of this year. He said, Saudi Arabia has enacted new anti-money laundering laws designed to impede the flow from Saudi Arabia to terrorist groups. However, significant enforcement by Saudi Arabia of several of these new laws appears to be lacking. Furthermore, even if these laws were fully implemented, they contain a number of exceptions and flaws which weaken their effectiveness in curbing terror financing. In April of 2003, he goes on, the Saudi government adopted rules governing opening of bank accounts in Saudi Arabia and operation and general operational guidelines. The interesting part was, first of all, I'm not sure about the implementation, he says. We couldn't find very good implementation. But even if there was full implementation, within their own rules, in one little paragraph, they exempt the Muslim World League, the International Islamic Relief Organization, IIRO, and the World Assembly of Muslim Youth as a multilateral organization that they exempted. These three are the largest. And by largest, he's apparently talking about largest funders of terrorists coming out of Saudi Arabia. They were specifically exempted in this law. And questionable, perhaps, let's say. And Bush has inexplicably dropped this program that started out in the first year that they did this under the Clinton administration. It was called the Name and Shame Program, the FATF program, where we created a list of nations that support terrorism. And in the first year that this is Lee Walowski, the project co-director of the Independent Task Force on Terrorist Financing, speaking before the Senate Banking Committee hearing on September 29th. He says, Remarkably, in my view, the Bush administration after 9/11, or even prior to 9/11, has certainly, continuing in the post-9/11 period, just dropped this entirely, dropped support for the FATF name and shame process. It's inexplicable. In the first year that we did this in the Clinton administration, the FATF process designated 15 countries. The next year, 8 of them stepped up and had in place adequate anti-money laundering regimes to get off the list. It was a very, very effective mechanism, and it's been dropped without comment or explanation by the current administration. Could that be because perhaps Saudi Arabia is on the list? I don't know. Interesting question. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Julie in Michigan on the line. Hey, Julie, welcome to the program.
Hi, Tom. Great show as usual.
Thank you.
I just wanted to ask a question kind of different from the rest of the show today. But do you think that Martha Stewart's upset that Bush Getaway was selling his Harkin oil stock right before it tanked without getting prosecuted? And how do you think he did that?
Yeah, well, obviously, Bush was an inside, you know, was doing inside trading. He was actually on the committee, the audit committee, as was Cheney with Halliburton. Cheney did something very similar with Halliburton just before he left Halliburton. And, you know, both of them were the clear beneficiaries, in Bush's case of about $700,000, in Cheney's case of several million dollars of profits as a result of the same kind of insider trading that Martha Stewart was at first accused of and never convicted of, by the way.
Right.
She was convicted of lying to cover up what she was afraid might, you know, go in that direction, and turned out it wasn't, you know, they couldn't even prove that she had done that. I would imagine that the irony has not escaped her. But, you know, A, she's a Democrat. B, she's a woman. So, and C, the Bushies needed a fall guy, as it were, a fall girl in this case. They needed somebody to go down so that all their corporate cronies could continue to rip us off.
Do you know if federal prisoners have the right to vote, if she'll be able to vote in there or not?
The right to vote is on a state-by-state basis. You don't vote at the federal level. There is no federal vote.
She's in a federal prison, though, so...
Yeah, but she's in a federal prison, and it's in Maryland, isn't it?
Oh, so she'd be governed by those laws?
I believe... It depends on, you know, the residency requirements. Sometimes you have to live in a state for a certain number of days or months before you can
sure.
be considered a resident, and sometimes if you can just prove that you're a resident. And some states allow prisoners to vote, ex-prisoners to vote. I don't know that any states allow people in prison to vote, but I may be wrong on that.
I heard that a couple did.
Okay, it may well be. Frankly, it's not something that I've looked into, you know, in great depth.
Anyway, thanks for taking my call.
Yeah, thanks
have
for calling.
Great,
great to hear from you, Julie.
Thank
you very much. 17 minutes before the hour, let's go to Jack in Santa Fe, New Mexico. Hey, Jack, welcome to the program.
Hi. I wanted to get the address of that Canadian public TV channel that you mentioned.
Oh yeah,
the web address.
Yeah, the web address. It's the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation's website, which is CBC.ca.
CD like in dog.
No, CBC as in Canadian Broadcasting Corporation.
Oh, okay.
CBC.ca as in Canada.
Right.
And then you put and that gets you their main site. And then if you just put /fifth, F-I-F-T-H.
F-I-F like in Frank.
Right. T-H. The program is called The Fifth Estate, so it's cbc.ca/fifth, and that gets you to the homepage for The Fifth Estate, for that program.
Right.
And then, you know, there's a click, you know, for the Cheney special. You just click right on it, and there's, you know, several web pages full of information about it.
What are the frequency for the station in Northern California that you carry? I think it's... Ukiah or one of those?
Yeah, KGOE. I don't know their frequency. I'm sorry. In Eureka, California.
What are their call letters?
KGOE.
KGOE.
Yep.
Okay. As far as I know, the prison that Martha Stewart's going to is in West Virginia.
Uh-huh. Okay. Well, again,
if they had a 30-day requirement, she wouldn't be there long enough. She's only going in tomorrow or the next day, I think.
Yeah. So maybe she was a resident of Connecticut. Maybe she can vote via absentee ballot. My guess is probably not. I just don't know.
That's probably not what she's worrying about.
Probably not.
Yeah.
Probably not. But, you know, it was interesting, all the media hoopla yesterday. It looks like, you know, she's not going to have a difficult time on the one hand. On the other hand, this has really upset her life, you know, substantially. And when you compare the high crimes and misdemeanors of just Bush and Cheney individually in their business lives, where they committed the exact same crime that she was, or at least it has been alleged, is certainly clear to, I think, to any observer that they did, the same crime that she's accused of. and benefited much more handsomely than she did. The irony, I'm sure, has not escaped her.
I wanted to mention that your show is absolutely critical. The station that we get it on, KTRC here, used to have Mike Malloy and three or four other similarly oriented programs. Now we're down to just you. We have Joseph Ferris and a bunch of other. I wish you'd spend some time telling listeners how they might help you to expand your coverage.
Well, thank you, Jack, for that segue. It's very simple. Support the sponsors. Sponsors are the lifeblood of commercial radio and television, for that matter. And so, you know, if you like this program, call the sponsors and tell them, and particularly the local sponsors.
Right.
Because they're the ones that make it possible for a local station to carry a program. Of course, you know, I'd love it if people patronized our national sponsors, specifically Small Dog Electronics and the Organic Wine Company. If you want to be an activist, a radio activist, really the way to do it is at a local level. If people are listening on the internet, for example, and they want us to be carried in their local market, in their local radio station, then, you know, just contact, find some local sponsors, and then go to the radio station and say, hey, we've got some sponsors here. Wouldn't you like to?
I promise my next computer will come from Small Dog.
Great. Yeah, they do good. They do good. Jack, thanks for the call.
Thank you.
Good to hear from you. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Journalist and author Bob Woodward called Saudi Prince Bandar almost family to the Bushes. At age 53, I'm quoting from Woodward now in his book, Plan of Attack, at age 53, Bandar was almost the fifth estate in Washington, amplifying Saudi influence and wealth. He insisted on dealing directly with presidents and is almost family to Bush's father. And he had maintained his special entree to the Oval Office under this President Bush. This is really quite remarkable how Saudi, quite simply here, again, Mallory Factor, the vice chair of the Independent Task Force on Terrorist Financing, said in September, he said, quite simply, Saudi Arabia continues to allow many key financiers of global terror to operate, remain free, and go unpunished within Saudi borders. Lee Wolowski, the project co-director of the Independent Task Force on Terrorist Financing, Saudi enforcement actions directed against al-Qaeda have largely avoided prominent financiers. There is no evidence, for example, that since September 11, 2001, Saudi Arabia has taken public punitive actions against any individual for financing terror. And of course, you got, you know, Christoph, Saudi Arabia is a corrupt monarchy that stands for religious intolerance and the repression of women. And, you know, he wrote that op-ed piece after going to Saudi Arabia. So, you know, it shouldn't be a surprise. 1-866-889-8894. I'll take a couple more calls here. Scott, New Mexico. Hey, Scott, what's up?
Hey, Tom. I just wanted to follow up where Jack left off, which was spreading the word about you and thanking local advertisers for advertising during your program here in Santa Fe. One of your local sponsors is called the Flower Market and Card Rages, and part of their ads up until our cutoff for registering had to do with registering to vote.
That's great.
And I called up and asked for the owner, and I said, look, I really want to thank you guys not just for asking folks to register, but for sponsoring the Tom Hartman program. And they said, you know what, we've been getting a lot of calls like that, and we really appreciate you calling. They love hearing that. Like, four phone calls like that is a landslide.
Yeah, yeah. Most people, you know, the rule of thumb is for every call you get, you know, there's between 1,000 and 5,000 people who don't call, you know.
Yeah, so I just really encourage folks to do that in Santa Fe. Call those local sponsors. Thanks, yeah. Tom.
Sure. Thank you, Scott. I appreciate it. Thanks for the kind words. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program. 10 minutes before the hour, transforming the world. You and me, transforming the world by revitalizing democracy. And it begins at home. Begins right here in the United States and in our local communities.
Bonjour, my name is Véronique Raskin. I founded the Organic Wine Company 25 years ago. If you love wine and have not tried our French wines, you are in for a treat. Nowadays, people everywhere are buying organic fruits and vegetables because they know they taste better. Organic grapes are so luscious. When turned into wine, you can really taste the difference with every sip. So our wines are delicious and eco-friendly. So I want to make it easy for you to try them out. call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE, and I will send you three of my favorite organically grown French wines at half off the regular price. That's just $25 plus shipping. Isn't that magnifique? I think so. If you don't share my enthusiasm, I'll gladly refund your money. So take me up on my offer and call me at 1-888-ECO-WINE. ECOWINE. Au revoir.
How can contemporary America possibly compare with 1933 Germany? Find out in Tom Hartman's brand new fully illustrated book, We the People, A Call to Take Back America. Through Tom's concise political analysis and Neil Cohn's vibrant illustrations, you'll observe an unsettling, if not shocking, perspective of America. You'll also hear what the founders of this country did to control corporate power. You'll be invited to consider how the American political system can be made more democratic, as well as comprehend the Project for the New American Century's vision for America. Here's what syndicated cartoonist Ted Rawl said after reading We the People.
An ambitious effort to explain everything that's wrong in America, how things got this way, and what should be done about it. We the People is the product of a brilliant and principled thinker.
We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. Available in bookstores everywhere.
Billionaires for both.
Now, it's time for This Billionaire Moment.
Some are charging that there's a connection between Halliburton being awarded no-bid contracts in Iraq and the fact that Vice President Dick Cheney used to run the company. Of course there's a connection. Would you rather do business with a bunch of strangers who may charge less or with a dear, dear friend who knows what's in your heart? That's why Dick gets $1 million severance check from us at Halliburton every year. It reminds him who his friends are. Friends shouldn't have to compete for contracts. Friends don't need government oversight, and friends know who their friends are. Cronyism sounds like such a bad word. Try friendship instead. A really lucrative friendship. I'm Xenophobe for This Billionaire Moment.
This Billionaire Moment is brought to you by BillionairesForBush.com.
Here come the billionaires!
This is a Workers' Independent News Service feature story. I'm Sarah Turner. A new report by the Human Rights Center of the University of California at Berkeley and the Washington, D.C.-based anti-slavery group Free the Slaves states that at any given time in the United States, 10,000 or more people are forced through violence to work in deplorable conditions for little or no pay. Kelly Ramirez has more.
According to the report, Hidden Slaves, Forced Labor in the United States, slavery occurs in at least 90 U.S. cities. About 46% of American slaves are engaged in sex work. Most of the rest are in domestic work, agriculture, and sweatshops. Laurel Fletcher of the Human Rights Center at UC Berkeley says three factors contribute to the use of forced labor.
The first is demand. There is a demand in this country for cheap, exploitable labor. Two, there's a lack of legal protections for workers in these sectors. And the final one, which is related, is a lack of monitoring. For example, domestic workers. The work takes place in the private home. Virtually no monitoring is going on.
Jolene Smith, director of Free the Slaves, says there are places escaped slaves can go.
We're fortunate that a number of homeless shelters and domestic violence shelters around the country have volunteered to take in victims of slavery and trafficking in the United States.
Smith says that people need to see slavery as related to other labor issues.
When we tackle the issue of slavery, we should also think of eliminating sweatshop labor and making sure that workers in factories have their basic rights. After that, the next sort of dot to connect is the right to organize. If workers are able to organize around the world, then the chances of them being enslaved are going to decrease.
The Hidden Slaves Report is available online at www.freetheslaves.net. For the Workers' Independent News Service, I'm Kelly Ramar.
Democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartman.
It's coming through a hole in the air from those nasty Tiananmen Square. It's coming from from the field, but this ain't exactly real, or it's real, but it ain't exactly there.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you.
Or against disorder from the sirens night and day, from the fires of the homeless.
Love the sun.
The ashes of the gay. Democracy is coming.
Oh, let's hope.
To the USA.
Hey, an extraordinary song, Democracy is Coming to the USA, written and performed by the Canadian Leonard Cohen. How's that for a bit of irony? Anyhow, welcome back. 4 minutes before the hour, Tom Hartman here with you. I just have to get these numbers out very quickly before we go to a caller here. In September, the Challenger, Gray, and Christmas outplacement firm has been tracking unemployment numbers since 93. September, the month that just ended, was the second worst in all the years that they've been tracking this, back to 93, what's that, 11 years. And the first worst, of course, being September 2001. This September was the second worst to that. 107,863 jobs were announced, planned job cuts announced by employers during September. Those job cuts will hit over the next few months. At the same time, the number of new job openings, with 107,000 job cuts, the number of new job openings, 16,166, only 16,000. So it's not a good thing. As the San Jose Business Journal said, weak hiring announcements last month are not a good indication of strong job creation to come. Dave in Humboldt County on the line. Hey, Dave, welcome to the program. What's up?
Tom, I just wanted to let you know, I think a very significant thing happened around 10:30 last night in the Arcata City Council that's here in Humboldt. There's a hollow echo. Are you able to hear me?
Yeah, just fine.
And they voted a bill that had been initially introduced by the Veterans for Peace. It was calling for a demand for Congress to draft a bill of impeachment against both Bush, Cheney, Rumsfeld, perhaps others, for crimes against the people and for war crimes and such. And they did it after all the press had gone by, and I think there are cases.
But it got passed.
The second city in the United States to do this, I believe, Santa Cruz, California.
That's great. So it passed, Dave.
It did pass. All of those that were voting voted for it, and it went, yes, it did. And I think all the press have left, even the local papers have left.
Remarkable. Well, if you catch a news story on it, drop it to me an email. I'd appreciate it. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program. Our program today, produced by Louise. Thank you very much for your help, Louise, in producing the program. Ira running our board and answering the phones, engineering our program. Brad Walrod produced our music. Thanks to Shelby for streaming us around the planet. Shelby Lepre with radiopower.org. Thanks to our sponsors. Thanks to Michael Toth and Ben Birch for our archives. Thanks to the folks in our chat room for showing up, to Jay for our music, and to you for listening. See you here tomorrow, same time, same place.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Visit iowapeace.com for books on justice and peace. The Last Liberal Outlaw is Mike Palasek's new novel. Chuck Gregory with BlueEar.com had this to say. Palasek is at his best when writing about small-town America. It's a place he clearly loves, even as he pokes fun at its quirks and reveals the sickness that lies just below the surface. It's a place he knows, and he shares his knowledge in delightfully original ways, even as he cries out for change. We haven't had a writer like Palasek since Kurt Vonnegut was at his peak. Mike is an Iowa author, former federal prisoner.